right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How are you? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here till 5 a.m., as I am every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. Coming up in just a few minutes, our good friend Dick DiBartolo, writer from Mad Magazine, Match Game, and he is he's the GizWiz, GizWiz TV, you can see. And we're going to talk about the Consumer Electronics Show he just got back from and some of his favorite and least favorite gadgets of 2018. So the great Dick DiBartolo will be with us in just a few minutes. The Oscar nominations will be announced just about 6 hours from now. I'm looking forward to the nominees, and I'm going to give you my predictions in all the major categories of who I think will be nominated and what will be nominated, and we'll take your phone calls on that. The Razzie Award nominees came out. We'll talk about those, and we will talk about actors and actresses who have actually never been nominated for an Academy Award. And I think you're going to be surprised by some of the incredible performances that have not been acknowledged by the Academy. So that's all coming up on the show. We're going to talk about some great products that might help you out late in the show as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And it's 2 for Tuesday. Give me 2 for Tuesday! Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. Get them in now. We'll play them later. 312-981-7200. Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, and that's facebook.com/Nick D Show. So that's what's coming up on the show. Let me say hello to my great producer, Dan Shagrew. Hi, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about yourself?
You know, good. I'm looking forward to the Oscar nominations.
Sure.
7:20 our time this morning. They will be broadcast live over the intranets. It's weird because, you know, the morning shows?
Mm-hmm.
They always have it on. They have a delay. They always say it's live, but it's an hour later.
Right.
They always cover it like an hour later. So I'd sit and watch it on my tablet as it's happening. So it's going to be interesting, and I've got my predictions. So we'll see how well I do. And then the Razzie nominations came out. The thing about the Razzies is I'm like split. I'm torn because it's snarky and it makes me mad sometimes because they take easy targets and swipes at people. But then sometimes they go out and they make up an interesting category, which I think is kind of fun. So we'll go through those. That's coming up. And Dan, are you staying warm?
Trying to.
All right. Yeah, me too. In the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Hi, Vic.
Hey, I have good news, Nick.
Yes.
We're seeing a warm-up right now. We should be in the upper teens by daybreak.
Good Lord. I'll wear my Bermuda shorts.
Yeah. No, yeah. I'm okay. How you doing, sir?
I'm all right, man. I'm okay. Well, we are going to warm up to the mid-30s today, which is, you know,
yeah,
which is the warmest it's been in, like, a week.
Yeah, that's going to feel warm.
It's going to feel very warm. I'll open my windows.
Yeah.
So, well, Vic's in the newsroom covering everything, and he'll be there till 5 a.m. Dan is producing. I am your host. 312-981-7200 for talk and text anytime you want to jump in here. And also, it's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Every morning on the show, you, the listener, program what music bumps we play coming back from commercials and the news. And there's a theme each morning, and today is Tuesday, so it's 2 for Tuesday. You pick one artist, two songs, and pick them and request them at 312-981-7200, and we'll play them a little bit later on. So there you go. All right. Looking forward to catching up with Dick DiBartolo. He's just a legend. The guy's a legend. I remember the first time he was on the show. I mean, it's got to have been almost 20 years since he first appeared on my show. The guy wrote for Mad Magazine, still writes for Mad Magazine, and wrote for Match Game. And those were two of the formative things of my childhood, two of the things that shaped me. So I was very nervous when I got to talk to Dick DiBartolo the first time, but he's become a really good friend of the show, and he loves gadgets, and he just got back from the Consumer Electronics Show. And we'll get all the details from Dick coming up right after we take this break on WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It is Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for that. As you know, later on this morning at 7:20 Central Time, the Academy Award nominations will be announced. So we're going to talk about, I'm going to predict what I think will be nominated in all the major categories. And then we're going to talk about actors and actresses who have never been nominated for an Academy Award. And some of the names that we're going to be talking about, it's kind of shocking that they've never been nominated. We'll do that a little bit later on. We're going to talk about some great products that can help you out later, too. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And you can Follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show and stay connected on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. My guest this morning is one of my favorite guests and one of my favorite people. He is the co-host of the GizWiz TV show, which can be seen at www.gizwiz.tv. He is a writer for Mad Magazine, used to write for Match Game and other fantastic classic game shows, and he is just a gizmo and gadget junkie and has been forever. And he joins us to talk about the this is the most recent Consumer Electronics Show and talk about his list of the best of and the worst gadgets of 2018. And it's always a pleasure to welcome Dick DiBartolo back to the show. Dick, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Always good to hear from you, Dick.
Well, the same.
Yeah.
When are you going to go to CES?
You know, when it I used to go when it wasn't just localized in Vegas, because they used to have local. They used to have them in, you know, in other cities, and I used to go to the Chicago.
Yes, they had one in Chicago.
Yeah,
right?
It was McCormick Place. It was always at McCormick Place. And
yes,
I went every year. I used to go every year, and you know, but now that it's just centrally located in Vegas, it's hard for me to get out there. How big is the, I mean, what are we talking about here? How many days does it take to even cover?
We're talking about 180,000 registered people.
Oh my man! Yeah.
It is so huge. It is like five convention centers. It's mind numbing. I mean, it's to the point where I'm thinking, you know, I should just stay home and read press releases. You can't go to a restaurant. You can't get a cab. It's crazy.
How much of it can you realistically cover since it's so big?
You know what? I've been doing it. This is my 30th year.
Wow.
And so I sort of have it down to a science. The great events for the press are these. One is called Showstoppers and one is called PepCom. And they are outside events where in the room there are 100 exhibitors. Each one may be on a 10-foot table, but on that table is the newest product, someone from the company, and usually maybe someone who helped design the product.
Mm.
So whereas in the convention center, it could take you an hour to find someone to talk to.
Wow.
Here, just going from table to table is the easiest way to find the newest stuff. And then immediately talk to someone who with all your questions. So those two help a lot. And then I just avoid all the big meetings, you know, because everybody's reporting on what LG's doing and what Panasonic is doing, and so I just look for the niche stuff.
Right, right, right. And that's your specialty anyway, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
So tell everybody about GizWiz TV.
So GizWiz TV, I have a co-host, Chad Johnson, OMG Chad, and Chad's famous. I have never, ever played Minecraft. Have you?
No, I have not.
No. Okay. Okay. So Chad is a Minecraft guru.
Right,
okay.
Right.
I believe he has 300,000 followers. And he does a YouTube thing all about the ins and outs of Minecraft. But we met at a station called Twit This Week in Tech, Leo Laporte's network. And when Leo didn't want to host GizWiz anymore, Chad joined me. And so Chad flew out to Vegas also, and we shot videos together. And he's a young guy. I think he's like 26. So he was looking for the more gamey things,
right,
and I was looking for the more offbeat things.
Right.
And this year, I think that the most word of mouth was about a thing called FlexPy from Royal, and they spell Royal R-O-Y-O-L-E, because it's a 7.8-inch Android tablet that won't fit in your pocket. However, you can fold it in half.
Really?
And put it in. Yes. So when I got there, I mean, the crowds were astounding, but we had gotten the name of the PR person. So they said, listen, we'll get one. We'll take you into a private room and show it to you. And I said, you know, can I literally bend this? And the guy said, yeah, do it. And you feel a little weird.
Yeah, I bet.
But
yeah,
you take, you know, he said, just bend it backwards. So I joked. I said, oh, I see there are 9 tablets under the table here where people have tried to bend them forward. So when you bend it in half, you instantly get 3 screens. You get a front screen, a rear screen, and a binder screen. There's a narrow screen where the tablet is folded, and you can get notifications and phone numbers on that. You can take phone calls from either side of the tablet.
Wow.
When it's folded. You can play Battleship. I mean, I don't know that you definitely need this, but it was very ingenious.
So that's the Royal FlexPi foldable smartphone, correct?
Exactly.
How much is that going for?
You know what? In China, what they did is they took the price in China, and here it's probably going to be around $1,300.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, and not till the end of the year.
And it won't be available till the end of the year. Wow.
To the end of the year.
Yeah. Wow. And you know what I saw? I was watching some of the footage on TV of, you know, some of the local footage of people covering the CES. And
yes.
There was a thing they did on the Daily Show. Ronnie Chang did a thing about the Consumer Electronics Show on the Daily Show. He did a segment. It was really funny where he showed this this thing that makes loaves of bread. It was like a giant vending machine.
Yes. I know it's not for your home.
Right.
I mean, unless you have a really big home.
Right.
But it makes and bakes bread.
Right.
And the theory is you'll go to your supermarket and you can either get a loaf that's already baked, or you can stand there and watch it bake and then get a fresh baked loaf of bread.
Right.
So I'm not sure if you want to go through that. Yeah, things like that are kind of wacky. I never know if it's going to happen or not. I tell you, if you're paranoid, I found a gadget for you.
Okay.
Okay. It's called Smarty Mute Plus. Now, this is for people who have Amazon devices that they have a mute switch, but in case you feel that pushing the mute switch is not really going to turn off the microphone, and you want to make sure you're talking about your next contract or cash under the table.
Right.
So this thing goes over the top of the Echo and the Echo Plus and whatever the big giant one it's called.
Sure.
And it actually develops white noise. And you push it, every time you push it, it will develop white noise for 10 minutes up to an hour. And that way the microphone cannot hear anything that's being said.
Oh,
and
okay.
The strange thing is when I tell people that, a lot of people go, oh, I like this because the mute button is probably a software shutting off of the mic. And if someone hacked that, the mic could be on all the time. So anyway,
yeah, that's crazy.
And $25.
That's $25. Well, if you're paranoid, as you said, Dick, that's a pretty good price for that. It's funny because like I do not have one of those Alexas or any of that kind of stuff.
Yes,
because I they kind of freak me out. The story about last year where Alexa was suddenly laughing in the middle of the night. Do you remember that story, Dick?
Where, like, there, no.
Oh, no, there were, like, reports of Alexa just, like, in the middle of the night just going, and laughing in the and freaking and freaking people out. Like, wait a minute, what do you, I so those things are a little bit, a little too AI for me, I gotta say.
Yes, and the funny thing is when I tune into Twit and they talk about it, on the show I try and call it Alex A, because if you say the other thing,
yeah,
your thing
right.
will wake up.
Exactly right.
And,
right.
and I'm sitting there and I don't realize and he'll say Alex A, what's the weather? And I look at the TV, but suddenly I hear in New York City the weather, and I realize, oh, mine just woke up.
Right.
And is now giving me the weather outside my front door,
right,
even though this guy is talking from Las Vegas.
Well, that's, that
so
happens,
you're right,
you know.
That
happens all the time. People who are, when they do the Google, like when Google was advertising for their, for their commercials, my phone would go off. Like, cause it would say, Google, what's this? And all of a sudden my phone, because I have Google on my phone and I have Google Voice,
yes,
on my phone.
Yes.
And so my phone would buzz on my TV while the commercial was on. And I didn't, you know, it was just because the commercial set off the Google thing.
I know. And the funny thing was, I was I have an office and I have an apartment. I was in my apartment and this was going on. And suddenly a voice says, your local weather on the Upper West Side. And I go, wait a minute. I don't have Google in my apartment. How is this possible?
Yeah.
And I realized for Christmas, I got an Amazon tablet. And it must be built already into the tablet.
Oh, man. You can't get away from it, Dick. You can't get away from it.
It can be spooky.
It can be
a spooky thing.
Right. One of the other things that I saw was you do mention a massage chair, but the one that I saw, again, on the Daily Show segment that they did, was a massage chair that was like a super giant massage chair that was patterned after a Lamborghini. So it had all the... it had looked like it was...
Yes.
And it looked insane, and I can't even remember how much it was, but the price was just ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. The one that Chad and I played with was $10,000.
Oh, my God.
$10,000. And you don't sit in them. You get in them. I mean, they lock your feet. They lock your arm. I mean, they really give you a massage. Chad said it actually cracked his back.
Wow.
in a good way. Also, the one that the $10,000 one had Alex A. in it, supposedly the only massage chair with that. So I said, does she talk to you and say, now I'm going to crack your back? So it doesn't, but you can tell it to you want the chair to concentrate on your legs or your back. Or for $10,000, I'd be so uptight from having spent that much money. I would need two of those chairs.
Yeah, no kidding. I would have to spend the next 3 months in there knowing I spent $10,000 on that thing just to relax.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, but that it's very funny is because there must have been 10 of them there. I'm not quite sure how word gets out that so-and-so's coming out with a chair. Let's do one, too.
Mm.
But you walk in and you see a chair like we saw one at PepCon, and I thought, oh, this is really unique. But then the next day when I went to the convention center, I saw the one you're talking about, the Lamborghini one. And then I saw another. And I'm thinking, this must be the new thing. People who have thousands of dollars to spend on massage chairs.
Yeah, that's really crazy. Dick, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
All right, Dick DiBartolo is here, one of my favorite guests of all time. You know, used to write for Match Game, writes for Mad Magazine. He is a legend, and he also happens to be a gadget freak and the co-host of GizWiz TV. So we're going to take a break for the news, and when we come back, more with Dick DiBartolo right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, as we are every weekday morning from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. The Academy Award nominations are announced this morning, and they will be announced this morning, and we will I'll be watching it. It's at 7:20 our time, but I'm going to make my predictions. And so I'll give you my predictions on what I think will be nominated. We're also going to talk about some of the actors and actresses who are never been nominated for an Academy Award. So that's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. But right now we're talking with Dick DiBartolo, writer for Mad Magazine, used to write for Match Game and other game shows. He's a great guy, one of my favorite guests, and he is also a gadget freak and the co-host of GizWiz TV, which you can see at gizwiz.tv. And he was at the Consumer Electronics Show, and we're going down some of the crazy stuff that he saw while he was there. Dick, welcome back.
I'm here. Yes.
All right, good. What else stood out for you over that? And by the way, how long were you there, Dick?
I was there for 3 days.
Okay. So what were some of the other highlights for you?
This thing called SatPac, I thought this was a great idea. It's a satellite converter for your smartphone. So you're up in the mountains and you are a million miles, you know, 1,000 miles from a cell tower. And obviously there's no Wi-Fi either. And then there's an emergency. So the SatPac, it's almost the size of another phone, and it has two claws that open up, and you put your phone in it, and then you flip out this little antenna, and now this little thing, which also has its own battery, connects to your smartphone via Bluetooth, and they're actually touching each other. And then you can get and send text messages anywhere in the world.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. So they have permission to use the 23 stationary satellites, so it covers all of the U.S., and the guy said up to, I think he said a couple hundred miles offshore. So what's neat about this is that the unit is $249, and I used to write a boating column, and there are other satellite phones. The problem is most of them charge a monthly fee whether you use it or not.
Oh.
And for most people, the satellite, you hopefully maybe just use it twice in your life.
Yeah, yeah.
Just when you're totally in a place where you can't get. So their thing is you pay $249 for the, it's called SatPac, S-A-T-P-A-Q. And then messages are about 40 cents if you buy, I don't know, you buy a card of messages. So I think, if you're traveling, going hiking or mounting or skiing where you're going to be away from a cell signal,
yeah,
this is not a bad thing to have, especially if you travel a lot
yeah.
and do that kind of camping or hiking.
Yeah, it seems like it pays for itself, and there's no monthly fee, correct?
No monthly fee.
Okay.
You just buy the gadget and then pay by the message.
Ah, well, that sounds like a great idea. That is.
Yeah. Now this, everybody makes fun of me for liking this. Now, this is not for you to buy or me to buy. It's for restaurants to buy. I would love convention centers to buy this. It's a device called Stallmate.
Okay.
And what it is, it's a lock for the door on the stall that you use when you go to the bathroom. Now, the difference with this is that the iron bar or the bar that you push to lock the door has a pocket on it, big enough for your phone or your wallet. And so when you go in, especially like at CES, everybody in the world was on the phone in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And every once in a while from one of the stalls, you'd hear, oh, yeah, I just dropped my phone.
Oh.
Either it would hit the tile and, you know, you would hear the back of the phone come off or the phone come apart. Or worse than that, you'd hear it fall in the water.
Into the toilet, yeah.
So, yeah, exactly. So this is a way that when you go in, you put it in that pocket. And when you leave, there's no fear of you forgetting it because to unlock the stall door, you are staring at your phone.
Yeah.
Because the bar to lock the door goes behind your phone. So I think that's a great idea for restaurants and convention centers.
Yeah, that is
to
a good idea.
Also, because it's worse when they have a little shelf in there, you put everything down and then leave and it's there on the shelf.
Right.
So I thought Stallmate was a clever idea.
Yeah, that is a clever idea, and it is smart to attach it to the lock. So then, like you said, Dick, you're not going to forget it because you got to unlock the door to get out.
That's right. You'd be a real dummy to unlock it and leave without it. Anker. Do you know that company, Anker? A-N-K-E-R.
Yes.
Anker makes all kinds of cell phone charges, and they make incredible devices at very reasonable prices. So they showed me, it's called the Anker Atom PD-1, and they call it the world's smallest power delivery wall charger. It's 1.5 inches square and a little plug for the AC, but it can charge any device you have. It's 30 watts, so it's powerful enough that it can also charge your Chromebook. It can charge and run the 12-inch MacBook. It can run the new MacBook Air, and it's under $30.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really great. It's going to be out, actually, on Amazon. You can pre-order it now. It's coming out the end of January or early February. So that's called Atom PD1.
Oh, that's cool. That's very, very cool.
Yeah, that was...
Are most of the things that they debut at the CES over the during the year, do those things usually come out the same year? Is it usually just something like months or
no? You know, a lot of times, and I would say 40% of the time, I'll go up to a booth and I'll say what's new, and they'll go these, and I go, yeah, but these were on your table last year, and they go, yeah, but now you can buy them. So often it's 6-9 months. Sometimes they'll say, well, we hope to have it out by Christmas. Mm. Sometimes really far out gadgets, they know if there's not a big response at CES, it's never going to happen.
Right.
You know, so it's also a way to spend a fair amount of money. I don't know what it cost to display at CES or one of those events, but it's a good way to judge what the reception is. If people go, well, I have no interest in this, you're better off just not producing it. And then there are some things that are a couple of years away, and one of them I thought was neat. It's from a company. It's called IAV Auto, mm-hmm. And I believe they produce cars in the European market. But what they were showing was something called side window entertainment. And so this is for the passenger. As you're driving, the window, the passenger window, every building of note that you pass by, the window lights up with an outline as you pass it and tells you what it is. If you're driving very slowly, it will tell you what restaurants you're passing.
Wow.
And if it appeals, I know. I think it's very clever. Again, it's just for the passenger. And then the guy said something else we're working on. Side window entertainment, he thought was 2 to 3 years away.
Wow. That's something.
That's something. And then he said, this is something else we're working on. So you're having engine trouble, and you open the hood, and they have this 24-hour service center standing by, and they send a hologram to your phone, and they say, hold your phone over the engine, and you'll see the hologram lock in when you are in the exact place you should be. And they have a demo set up for this, and it locks in. And then an arrow points, and it says, we think the green fuse is burned out. The green fuse is in the box the arrow is pointing to. And then he opens the fuse box. And then the arrow turns another color and says, it's the top fuse there. And the arrow points to it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
I mean, these days with cars, there's a limited amount of things I think anybody can do. I bought a new Yamaha outboard motor last year, and I was talking to the East Coast service guy, and I said, so what can I fix on this engine? And he said, you? Nothing. He said, if anything goes wrong, a technician comes down with a computer. There's a computer port on the side of your engine. He plugs into that. And then the engine tells them what's wrong with it.
That's amazing. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Okay, let's get to, I want to make sure we get to this, because you did your best of 2018 and the worst of 2018. Let's start out with the worst, and we can save the best for after the commercial break. So what were some of the worst? You make the list. These are the worst gadgets of the year.
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to go to my computer here. Okay. And, oh, God. The Smart Swab.
Smart,
oh my,
smart.
Do you know what?
Have you not seen
that in the commercials where it's to get wax out of your ears?
Okay.
So they're $10, and I'm thinking, what? You know, this company's taking an awful risk selling you these things to stick in your ears. Well, I think I figured out why it was. No problem, because it doesn't fit in your ear. I could not get anything out of my ear. I asked my spouse. I said, "Stick this in your ear. See if you can get anything out of your ear." So it was garbage. Oh. It was a piece of garbage.
So
now
it's,
the weirdest
it was,
thing.
It, no, hang on, Dick, hang on. Yeah. We're going to take a break, and when we come back,
okay,
we'll jump back into the worst of 2018 and the best of 2018. Okay.
Yep.
All right. Dick DiBartolo is with us. Do not get the smart swab. It's not very smart. It can't fit in your ear. That's the last thing you need is a swab that doesn't fit in your ear. All right. We'll take a break and we'll come back with more with Dick DiBartolo right after this on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. The Oscar nominations will be announced in just a matter of hours, and I'm going to give you my predictions in the major categories, and then we're going to talk about some actors and actresses who have never even been nominated, and you'll be surprised at some of the people who have not been nominated or even considered. So there you go. All right, that's all coming up. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, let's get back to our conversation with the great Dick DiBartolo. He is the co-host of GizWiz TV. It's a show that you can see at gizwiz.tv. Writer for Mad Magazine and all-around great guy. And he puts together a list of the worst and best gadgets each year. So we're going down the worst here first from 2018. And let's welcome Dick back to the show. All right, Dick, let's get back to it.
Okay, so I'm not calling this the worst of, but I'm calling this the what were they thinking of gadget of 2018. And by the way, I saw this at CES 2018. They were not, or at least I couldn't find them, at CES 2019. That might say something about where this product went. Okay, it's from Kodak. And Kodak licenses their name to many different companies that make all different kinds of instant Kodak cameras and stuff. But I said to the guy, so are you Kodak, like Rochester Kodak, the original? And he said, yes. So what they introduced in 2018, and they had talked about for several years before, was a new Kodak Super 8 cassette film camera.
Oh, wait a minute. In 2018, they're introducing this.
Yes, a Super 8 that takes the Super 8 cassettes from, I don't know, what was in the 60s? I said, well, why? And he said, because there's something about film that video, digital video cannot get. And I said, all right, well, what's it going to cost? And he said, $2,000. Well, I went back to the hotel, and the next day I went back to Kodak, and it was a different guy there. And I said, you know, I was here yesterday, and the guy showed me that camera over there, you know, the film camera.
Yeah.
I said, he said it was $2,000. That can't be right. He said, oh, no, it's $3,000. I know. I thought he was going to say, no, it's $500.
Right,
no.
Right.
And the film processed, first of all, you're still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. You know what? I'm glad you're on because the fuse just went.
Oh, a fuse just went? Oh, no.
Yeah, you know what? This is great. My Skype is out. My screen is out.
We're here. I can hear
good.
You.
Yeah. Last night it was 4 degrees here.
Yeah.
And my apartment was freezing. I have two electric heaters on, and one of them obviously just blew a fuse.
Oh, no.
But fortunately, oh, I know. You know what? In case I lose track of you, I'm plugged into an uninterrupted power supply, which is probably going to run for another 10 minutes.
All right. That's plenty of time. We're good.
Okay, good. Okay.
Good.
All right. So the Kodak guy, it's $100 to process a roll of this film.
This is okay. This is the stupidest idea I've ever heard.
Yeah, because the film still doesn't have sound, so they have a sound system in the camera that records the sound to an SD card, and then I believe you mail the film and the SD card back to them, and they I don't.
It's
anyway,
just ridiculous. Yeah. Oh, all right. Let's you know what. Let's get to the good stuff. Now we talked about this the last time you were on, so we'll skip that one. But the smash mute button, which I thought was fantastic. We talked about that last time.
Oh yeah, that's great.
And what about the Candylicious bubbles?
Candylicious bubbles. Chad loved this because his family loved it. They are bubbles you blow and then eat. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So Chad's recommendation is just don't buy the chocolate ones. They taste like chemicals.
Uh-huh.
But the fruit flavored ones are decent and fun.
Okay.
Tell me another one of my favorite gadgets.
The Elgato green screen.
Oh, I am so jealous. Chad also has this, too. Okay. I have a green screen, a pop-up green screen. Have you had one of those where you open the bag and the thing just pops up? And
I've never had one, but I know what you're talking about.
Okay, yes, it's like the $70, it's great. It took five of us 2 hours to try and fold it. I don't ever open it again because I'm terrified it's going to pop out.
Right.
And I'll... So the one that Chad has, it's in a box on the floor, and you just raise it, and as you raise it, the tripod, accordion-style tripod, raises with it, and it just stays up. It's $160.
Wow.
But it's great. It's really great.
Really great. How about the Canine Sports Sack?
Oh, my gosh. The Canine Sports Sacks, I love this. As a matter of fact, if you go to gizwiz.biz and type that in. So it is a way to carry your dog on your back. And I said, well, why would you do this? Well, the guy said, suppose you're hiking and you want to take your dog with you. Your dog can sit in the backpack. My dog actually loves it.
Is that
but
right?
The other reason he gave, I thought was great. You have a big dog and a little dog. You walk 5 blocks, the little dog is tired. The big dog wants to go another 100 blocks. So you just plop the little doggy in the backpack. And Charlie, my dog is a rescue dog named Charlie. He puts his paws on my shoulder.
Oh.
And looks over either side of my head to see where we're going.
Right.
They make them for dogs up to about, I think, 20 pounds.
The canine. I love the name of it. I love the name of it too. The Canine Sports Sack. That's really great.
Yeah, the sports sack. Exactly. It's like a sack. His paws go through two little armholes.
Yeah.
And then there's a little thing that clips onto his collar. So
that's great.
He doesn't jump out.
Very
but Charlie
cool.
doesn't ever try to jump out.
All right. Well, Dick, I hope has your fuse been fixed?
No, I didn't run into set it up, but we're still on the USB thing.
Okay, well,
so, you know, it's so funny. It's Cyber Power. It's so funny because the battery went, and I thought, oh my gosh, another battery is $70. I said, 5 years, I never used it. And I said, oh well, you know what? I'm going to invest $70.
Yeah.
So this is the first time.
How about that?
In 7 years. That it's come in handy.
How about that? Listen, Dick, always a pleasure.
I mean, being on your show is worth it.
That's what it is. I appreciate it. Dick, it's always a pleasure. It's by the way, it's really freezing cold here in Chicago, too.
With four in the city.
Isn't that crazy? That's so crazy.
And the wind chill was minus 20.
Yeah, fantastic. it's just January. Dick, always a pleasure. I love to talk to you. Gizwiz.biz and Gizwiz.tv. And you can check out Dick DiBartolo. And again, you're writing for MAD. So we got
Yes, I'm in every issue continuing. I've been in every issue for about 52 years now.
Isn't that amazing? That's so great. Dick,
yeah.
Dick, always
a 40-year-old guy. It's amazing.
40-year-old guy. There you go. Dick, thanks so much, man.
Okay, buddy. I love talking to you.
Okay, man. Take care. Dick DiBartolo, everybody. One of my favorite guests ever. Yeah. That's fun. So much fun talking with that guy, man. Seriously, an amazing history, and he loves those weird gadgets, and it's always a blast to talk to him. So that's Dick DiBartolo. We're going to take a break for the news. Scorps, man. Every time, I always mention this, whenever we talk about the Scorpions, and you know, this is your go-to show on WGN if you want to talk about the Scorpions. I don't see that happening on the Wintrust business minute, but I'll tell you this: if you Google the Scorpions and look at them like performance pictures of these guys, their mouths are always wide open. Like if you just do a Google image search, maybe not every single picture, but the majority, I would say at least 75% of every picture taken of the Scorpions, one of them or all of them have their mouths wide open. Like they're, like that. And again, my favorite, as you know, Dan, my favorite tribute band, because tribute bands always take names from the songs. Like, you know, one of the Zeppelin tribute bands is called Presence, from the album Presence, you know. Aaron Tedesco's Little Queens. That's her Heart tribute band. Okay, so usually take names from an album or a title of a song or whatever. My favorite tribute band name, local band, the Scorpions, their tribute band, and they're just called Scorps. And that's the greatest. They're just called Scorps. So, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. It's Tuesday, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday! Which means we get to hear another Scorps jam. Marissa, who's in Colorado, chose Winds of Change. It's a windy night in Colorado, which is the reason why she's up listening. Well, I'm glad you're listening, Marissa. And that was like the Scorpions. That was like one of their biggest hits. Maybe their biggest hit. Probably their highest charting hit. Which is not cool, because their early stuff is just all jams. Like, their first four albums are fantastic. You know, I saw Scorpions, right?
I do remember you saying that.
And Bon Jovi opened, got booed off the stage. The Scorpions fans had no patience for Bon Jovi. This was before Slippery When Wet. This was the only song he had that was a minor hit at the time. Ooh, she's a little runaway. That was the only hit that Bon Jovi had at the time. And the Scorpions fans were relentless. They were like, get off the damn stage. And this was like at the Rosemont Horizon. And I was one of those people saying, get off the damn stage.
I was just about to say, led by Nick DiGilio,
yeah,
in the second row. Instigator.
Yeah. No, it was a hostile crowd, I'll tell you, man. They were not happy. But anyway, so get to hear another Scorpions tune here on a windy Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday. 312-981-7200. Now, Dan, you don't get to the movies basically at all anymore.
Not anymore, unfortunately.
When do you think you're going to take Emily to her first film?
Actually, Eileen took her to see Mary Poppins Returns.
Oh, how'd that go?
It went well.
It
she
did?
Enjoyed it, yeah.
Was she okay in the theater?
She was okay. Yeah, you know, it was, you know, I think it was the right length, and they didn't have any, you know, she was engaged enough and was able to follow enough along that it was a pleasurable experience.
It's a Disney movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
I didn't know whether she had gone, but it's always a little scary that first time.
Absolutely.
You know, you take the kid there, they might freak out.
Right.
And, you know, the lights go down and movies are loud now, you know, and so, but that's cool. I'm glad she had a good time.
Yeah.
Good, 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 good. Did Eileen like it?
She did. She didn't realize that it was a continuation of the story as opposed to a remake, so that took a few minutes to be adjusted.
Yeah, it's a sequel. It's a sequel, yeah.
But yeah, she said she really liked it.
You know what? It's good. And I went in, you know, because I love Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins is a great classic, you know, mm-hmm. but I went in and expectations were not so high.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really good.
Good.
And Emily Blunt's great in it. And so is Lin-Manuel Miranda. And Dick Van Dyke has a musical number, and he's 95 years old or something. He's dancing around on desks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Astounding. But so you don't really have you're not rooting for anybody.
Nah, not particularly.
For the Oscars. I was just telling you off the air that I looked up the the Independent Spirit Awards, which are like the opposite of the Oscars. They take place the day before the Oscars. They take place on a beach in a tent. Nobody's dressed to the nines. You know, everybody's like wearing hats and all kinds of cool stuff. And it's this sort of antithesis to the Oscars. And a lot of people who are nominated for Oscars also attend these awards because there are a lot of independent movies and independent spirit films that do get, you know, Oscar nominations. And I was looking at the nominees for the Independent Spirit Awards, and they all, you know, I will say this, Hereditary is nominated, which I'm pleased about. So is Toni Collette. See, they got it right. Independent Spirit Awards get it right. And Suspiria is getting the Robert Altman Award, which goes to the director, the casting director, and the cast. The Robert Altman Award is going to Suspiria. I was like, all right, man, Independent Spirit, right on. That's the only award that movie's ever going to get. It's nominated for cinematography for Independent Spirit Awards. I would love to see it get costume for an. It's not going to get any. The Oscars are not going to. There's not going to be one single even thought to nominate Suspiria for anything. I'd nominate it for everything, but I, you know, the costumes and there's a really insane, lengthy dance number that the students at the class do for an audience. And the makeup and the costumes for that are just fantastic. And the makeup, actually, because they make Tilda Swinton an old man. And it's really good makeup. So maybe he'll sneak in there and get makeup. I don't know. Hey, listen. You know, because makeup might be the category that Suspiria could sneak in there. Because Bad Grandpa, the Jackass movie, got nominated for an Academy Award, man. A Jackass movie with Johnny Knoxville was nominated for an Academy Award. It was for makeup because they had to make him an old dude. So maybe it'll sneak in there. Tilda Swinton is an old man. Hey, listen, if a Jackass movie can get nominated, why can't Suspiria? All right. Well, so the nominees come out this morning in all the categories, and it's usually done in two parts. They do like... the minor categories, because they do announce every nominee in every category. So it starts at 7:20 a.m., 5:20 a.m. L.A. time, which is why this is the day of the year, Dan, where publicists and friends are calling big stars and waking them up at 5 o'clock in the morning. This is the day. And then they end up on the Today Show, Good Morning America. They end up on the CBS Morning News all morning long and then all afternoon long on the daytime talk shows. So... yeah, the push begins now. It's just going to be, you know, it's nothing but press for these guys. So it's usually done in two slots. So at 7:20, and I don't know who's announcing them?
Yeah, I'll look it up.
Okay, because I didn't even bother to look. I just knew it was at 7:20, and I'm going to watch it on the Oscars website. Now, listen, it's 7:20 our time, and if you're going to watch, it's not on TV. It won't be on TV till an hour later. When the network morning shows pick it up. But if you want to watch it live, you got to go online and go to Oscars.com or Oscars Go on your phone and watch it. And then that way you can watch it as it's happening.
Your presenters are Black-ish actress Tracy Ellis Ross and Silicon Valley actor Kumail Nanjiani.
Okay, so TV people? Well, no, Kumail made The Big Sick last year, but TV people? Are reading the nominees for the Oscars? Okay. Well, Kumail got nominated for an Oscar last year. Was it last year? Was Big Sick last year or the year before? He's the year before.
Maybe the year before.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't even know what the hell day it is. Okay, so let's go through some of the major categories, and I might throw in a few that aren't like major categories. I talked with Eric Childress about this, and we sort of got together, and he threw out some stuff, and I threw out some stuff, and I agree with almost all of his picks. So a lot of these are Eric's picks as well. So for Best Picture, now, and again, it's been, what has it been, about 8-9 years now that they've nominated more than five? Maybe even longer than that? Because it used to just be five movies, you know, five in every category. There were five nominees in every category. But then they wanted to get people to possibly see more of the movies, to get people to go to the theater. So they expanded the Best Picture category to include up to 10 nominees. Sometimes there's seven, sometimes there are eight, sometimes there's, it just varies, but now there are more than five, and it can go up to, I think it can go up to 10. And that's an effort to get box office up, you know, to get people, because there are a lot of, you know, at this time of year, another thing, Dan, there's a lot of completists out there, like people who are like, and it's really cool because a lot of theaters do, you know, the marathon. Where you can see it's 2 days. You see like five movies one day, and then you come back and see four the next day. It's a long haul, but a lot of theaters offer that. You know, so that if you really want to see every best picture nominee, you can. It's possible. So here are what I think. These are my predictions for best picture for 2018 for best picture. Black Panther. One, because it's a really terrific movie. Two, because they want, I think the voters want to make up for Wonder Woman in some way, because Wonder Woman was the comic book movie that was also a cultural, you know, event and a statement. So is Black Panther. So I think they're definitely going to nominate Black Panther. Black Klansman will also be nominated, and it'll be nice to see, you know, because Spike hasn't gotten a lot of awards love over the years, you know what I mean? And, well, of course, it's been a while since he's made a movie as good as Black Klansman, and it deserves the nomination. Next, Bohemian Rhapsody, which the fact that I'm saying that makes me sick, that it makes me ill that Bohemian Rhapsody, and I think it's definitely going to get nominated for Best Picture. That, by the way, number one on my worst list for 2018, Bohemian Rhapsody. Next is The Favorite, which I love. I love that movie. Green Book, which is, there's a lot of controversy. Dan, have you read about the controversy about this movie?
I've seen bits and pieces of it. I haven't gone in depth on it.
The family of Mahershala Ali's character, who is a real guy, says it distorted the truth. And some people are criticizing it because of it's a quote unquote simplistic look at race relations. Now, I feel bad for the family if indeed they did distort the history, because one of the reasons I hate Bohemian Rhapsody so much is because it's unbelievably historically inaccurate to the point where it's an insult to the memory of Freddie Mercury. And I hope that's not, I don't know much about Green Book. I do know this. I love the movie. I really did love the movie, and I'm sorry if it's historically inaccurate and all that stuff. And I guess Peter Farrelly made some comments that were really offensive or something like that. I don't know. There's some controversy that may hold Green Book back from actually, like, you know, but it's going to get nominated. There's no question about it. And I read a little bit about it, but I still really enjoyed the hell out of the movie. I really did. And watching Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali work together was one of the great joys of movie going last year. Just those two guys. I mean, amazing. Roma. Which was my favorite film of the year, nominated for Best Picture. A Star is Born, I think, will be nominated. And If Beale Street Could Talk. Those are the ones that I think will be nominated. The two that might sneak in there, like as an alternate or added, would be Vice, which is another movie I hated. Adam McKay's movie about Dick Cheney. And then First Man, which is a movie that we all love, but nobody went to see, and it never really got any acclaim. That's the movie about Neil Armstrong. But I'm saying Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody, The Favorite, If Beale Street Could Talk, Green Book, Roma, and A Star is Born. Those are my choices, with Vice and First Man being the alternates. So that's for Best Picture. If you guys want to jump in, what are you rooting for? 312-981-7200. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll jump back into the Oscar predictions that I'm doing. Marissa choosing the Scorpions, Rocky Like a Hurricane, on 2 for Tuesday. So 2009, Dan, was when they expanded the Best Picture nominees to more than five.
That was when the announcement was made. I don't know if it was that year, but in that range.
So 10 years. All right. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. You can be a 2 for Tuesday. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. We're talking about the Academy Awards. The nominations come out later this morning, and I'm making my predictions. Also, I completely forgot. I'm such a moron. It's NHL All-Star Weekend. How the hell did I forget that, Dan?
I don't know.
And they move things around, because normally the skills are on Saturday. The game is on Sunday. This year the skills are Friday. The game is on Saturday, which is good, because the SAG Awards are Sunday. Are they planning this for me? Is that?
I'm sure they are.
Is that what?
You figure they would have consulted you first, but no, they just went with it.
Yeah, so it's in San Jose, and So the skills, the which is my favorite part, is the All-Star skills. That's on Friday, starting at 6 o'clock Pacific, and then the All-Star game is on Saturday at 5 Pacific. So there you go. All right. Let's get back to the nominees, or my predictions for the Oscar nominees, which will be announced this morning a little bit later on. So let's get back to the categories here. Okay, for Best Director, I am going with Bradley Cooper from A Star is Born, Alfonso Cuarón for Roma, Peter Farrelly for Green Book, Spike Lee for BlacKkKlansman, and Adam McKay for Vice. And the other possibility is Yorgos Lanthimos for The Favorite. So Bradley Cooper, Alfonso Cuarón, Spike Lee, Adam McKay, Peter Farrelly. For Best Actor, I think the nominees will be Christian Bale for Vice. And he's the favorite to win, actually. Bradley Cooper for A Star is Born. You know why? Because he gained weight and he wore makeup. And that's what... That's what Gary Oldman did last year when he played Winston Churchill. Christian Bale, Vice, Bradley Cooper for A Star is Born, Ethan Hawke for First Reformed, Rami Malek, he's the other odds on, you know, he's the other one that could be. It's between him and Bale, Rami Malek. Because if for Bohemian Rhapsody, even people who hate the movie, and I'm one of the people, I despise Bohemian Rhapsody, but he did a great job. I have to fully admit it. He had a terrible script. He had horrible things to you know, terrible dialogue and stupid and inaccurate story. But he had Freddie Mercury down. I mean, he really did. And the performance sequences, he's phenomenal. So, and then Viggo Mortensen for Green Book. Viggo Mortensen was my favorite performance by a lead actor last year. And if it's going to come down to Christian Bale and Rami Malek. And as far as, like, Best Director goes, as I mentioned, I think it's going to be Alfonso Cuarón. John David Washington for BlacKkKlansman is the alternate, which would be cool because it would be like father-son, you know, getting nominated. No, well, not the same year, but, you know, Denzel's been nominated many times. Won three times, I think? Or twice. Glory for Supporting and Training Day. I think he's only won twice.
Yeah, twice.
Yeah. Best Actress. Yalitza Aparicio for Roma. I hope she gets nominated. I really do hope she gets nominated because it's a wonderful performance. But, you know, there are other names out there that could, you know, sneak in. Glenn Close for The Wife, who's really, you know, this movie was not, you know, it didn't get a huge release. And she's great in it. It's a terrific performance. Man, she's really getting a lot of love for it. You know, she's been around a really long time, Glenn Close, and she's a terrific actress, and she's great in the movie, so this is, like, her time. Olivia Colman for The Favorite, Lady Gaga for A Star is Born, and I'm going to say Nicole Kidman for Destroyer. But the other, I mean, the other strong one here, and I may be wrong on this, but the Academy loves Nicole Kidman. And this is, like, maybe her best performance ever. Like, a transformative... You've seen what she looks like, Dan, in this movie.
Yeah, it's stunning.
But it goes beyond that. Like, she's really great in it. But Melissa McCarthy is so good in Can You Ever Forgive Me? And she also is liked by awards people. She was nominated for Bridesmaids. But I really think it's going to be Nicole Kidman. Possible Toni Collette for Hereditary, please? Okay, please? For my money... that's the best performance by any human that any human gave last year. Toni Collette in Hereditary gave the best performance of any actor that year. So Yalitza Aparicio from Roma, Glenn Close for The Wife, Olivia Colman for The Favorite, Lady Gaga for A Star is Born, and Nicole Kidman for Destroyer are my guesses. And again, Melissa McCarthy, there's a real strong case for Melissa McCarthy to get nominated. And then I'm in the... Just in the off chance, the off chance that the Academy wants to, you know, be smart, they should nominate Toni Collette for Hereditary because it really is an astonishing performance. So, okay, those are some of the major categories. We're going to get into supporting actress. I'm going to do screenplay and a couple of other categories as well. The Academy Award nominations will be announced at 7:20 our time this morning, live from L.A., and I'm just making my predictions. Don't write these down because I'm probably going to be wrong when I unveil the actual nominees on tomorrow's show when we talk about the actual nominees. And again, if you want to jump in here, whose name do you want to hear? What movie do you want to hear be announced in a few hours as a nomination as a nominee for an Academy Award? 312-981-7200. The news is coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DeGilio here on 720 WGN. It's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah. That was Leon Bridges, 773 area code, requesting that. Bad, bad news. By the way, last night, Jimmy Kimmel did the halftime Trump special, you know, because we're 2 years in. And So he had a bunch of like celebrity guests on and stuff like that. It's essentially he's basically just tearing Trump apart, like he does every morning, but every night. But you know, he did it in as it was a special to celebrate all the accomplishments that Trump has done over the past 2 years. So Leon Bridges was on, and he came out and he sang Trump's tweets. I gotta say, it was pretty fantastic. It was pretty fantastic. And he's got that great voice. He's got that great voice. yeah. I think my favorite tweet that he sang was how he sang the Space Force tweet. I think that one was my favorite. But anyway, Leon Bridges, very funny. It was very, very funny. All right. The Academy Award nominations are announced later this morning, and it's a big night especially for movie freaks like me and movie critics and people who just love watching award shows and all that goofiness. And so I'm making my predictions on what I think will be nominated. I'm also going to mention, you know, the Razzies. We'll talk about what the Razzie nominations are. They've been announced. But here are my predictions. I'm giving you my predictions for some of the major categories. For this morning. Okay, so Best Supporting Actor, Mahershala Ali in Green Book. That's a given. That's just a given. Timothy Chalamet for Beautiful Boy. I'm saying Adam Driver for Black Klansman. Sam Elliott for A Star Is Born. And Richard E. Grant for Can You Ever Forgive Me? There is an alternate possibility that Michael B. Jordan might get nominated for Black Panther, because he's great, and second of all, he's phenomenal in the movie, and it would be nice to get sort of another major category nomination for Black Panther, because Black Panther will get technical nominations, you know, for effects, and I think song, it'll be nominated for song and things like that, but it would be nice to see, and Michael B. Jordan rules, so, but I really think that, Mahershala Ali is going to win it. I mean, he's steamrolling along. He really is. And he's great in it. But, you know, like all of these performances that I mentioned, they're all great. Like, this is a really strong category because Richard E. Grant is great in Can You Ever Forgive Me? Sam Elliott rules in everything and great in A Star Is Born. Adam Driver, Black Klansman, one of my favorite Adam Driver performances. Timothy Chalamet is the real deal, you know. So it's a good category, very strong category. Okay, Best Supporting Actress. I really don't even think they need to. they should just give it to Regina King. I mean, I don't even know why they're going to. They shouldn't even have any other nominees. They should just make a special announcement tomorrow and go, yeah, for this category, we're just going to call up Regina King right now and give her the award. Give her the award. Regina King, if Beale Street could talk, she's going to win. And not to discount any of the other performances in the category, but it is a phenomenal performance in a movie that I wasn't crazy about, but she is great in it, and she's winning everything. She's won like every critics award that you could possibly win. Any, you know, all these. She's going to win the SAG on Sunday. There's no question. She's going to win the Oscar. But for Best Supporting Actress, I'm going with Amy Adams for Vice, Claire Foy for First Man, Regina King for If Beale Street Could Talk, Emma Stone for The Favorite, and Rachel Weisz for The Favorite. Which is interesting because those three performances by those ladies are three of the best performances of the year in The Favorite. But Olivia Colman, Emma Stone, and Rachel Weisz, they're all kind of supporting. It's weird that they chose, you know, Olivia Colman to be the lead. I guess because she plays the queen and the battles really happen between the other two. So, Another alternate possibility here is Emily Blunt for A Quiet Place for supporting actress, because it's a great performance. And she, you know, she could be considered for Best Actress, too, for Mary Poppins. There's a chance that she, you know, that, you know, Mary Poppins is not getting a lot of buzz. I mean, Golden Globes gave it some nominees, but I don't know if it's going to get nominated outside of some of the technical stuff and probably a couple of songs. But yeah, so that's my choice for that category. For original song, I'm going to say All the Stars from Black Panther. The Place Where Lost Things Go for Mary Poppins Returns. Triple Little Light Fantastic for Mary Poppins Returns. Shallow from A Star Is Born. And We Won't Move from the Hate You Give. Those seem to be the ones. And Shallow's going to win. That's another one. That's another gimme. They should just say, hey, yeah, here you go. We're just going to give it to Shallow from A Star Is Born. So, but those are some of the ones. Original screenplay. I think The Favorite will be nominated. First Reformed. Green Book, Roma, and I'm going to say Eighth Grade. You know, Adam McKay won the original screenplay for The Big Short a couple of years ago, and he'll, you know, I mean, it's probably going to be Vice for that slot, but I'm just going to say Eighth Grade, because Eighth Grade is a wonderful movie and a great screenplay, and I think they might want to give it some love. Best Adapted Screenplay, Black Klansman. Can You Ever Really Forgive Me? If Beale Street Could Talk, A Star Is Born, and First Man. Those are the ones that I think are going to be in there. The other, there's a possibility that, I would love to see this, that The Death of Stalin gets nominated. That would be really funny and really cool. So, like cinematography, The Favorite, First Man, If Beale Street Could Talk, Roma, and A Star Is Born. Costume design, let's say A Star Is Born, Black Panther, The Favorite, Mary Poppins Returns, and Mary Queen of Scots. Because Mary Queen of Scots, you know, that's the big costume, besides The Favorite. But Mary Queen of Scots, have you seen the wigs and stuff that Margot Robbie and Saoirse Ronan have to wear? And Saoirse Ronan was on one of the talk shows, and I watch her whenever she's on any talk show, because hearing her talk makes me giddy. But she was talking about how she had to be, you know, wearing these costumes. She had to be, like, you know, wrapped in a corset. And, like, every day for hours at a time. And just, like, tight, you know, I mean, just horrible corset. And she said that her organs actually shifted. Like, for real. Like, her organs shifted, and they had to get back to normal. It took, like, a couple of weeks after the filming for her organs to get back to where they once were. So, you know, you're going to get a Best Costume nominee when you almost kill the lead actresses. When their organs shift. When your costumes make the organs of the actresses shift. Corsets, man. That's just... I can't believe women go through that stuff, man. So... And then let's go with foreign film. Burning, Capernaum, Cold War, Roma, and Shoplifters, and Roma will win. And I actually think that there is a possibility that, and this, I think this would be the first time in Oscar history, that this could happen, that a film wins Best Foreign Film and Best Picture. I don't think that's ever. I'm not sure. I'd have to check on that. But I think it's definitely going to win Best Foreign Film. There's no question that Roma is going to win Best Foreign Film. And Alfonso Cuarón could conceivably walk out with like five Oscars. You know, Dan, because he shot the movie, he edited it, he wrote it. He did everything on it, you know. I mean, it's so, and he's going to get nominated in all these categories. He could conceivably walk out with like six Oscars. And I'm not upset about that at all. I happen to think that guy's one of the greatest filmmakers ever to live, and that it's the best movie of the year. But that would be crazy. All right, so those are some of my choices, and we'll see what happens when the nominees are announced at 7:20 this morning. Let me give you guys the Razzie nominations here. Let me get them first. I'll take a break, and then we'll come back, and I'll have the Razzies, and we'll talk about. That's the complete opposite of what we just talked about. The Razzies. It's the Razzies are the Raspberry Awards, honoring the worst movies of the year. So we'll give you those nominees, and they've been announced. We'll do that, and then we're going to jump into a topic about. This is really crazy because a lot of tremendous actors and actresses have never been nominated, not even nominated for an Academy Award, and. The list is a little bit stunning, and we'll talk about those actors and actresses who have never been nominated. And if you want to jump in with what you're rooting for and what actors you wish would be nominated, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. More after this. Welcome back, everybody. Two for Tuesday continues. Yippee, Two for Tuesday! One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200, 773 area code, requesting Leon Bridges. That's coming home. He is good. He's really good. Dan, you know how Roger Badish posts today in Old Man Music?
Yes.
Okay. He just posted one about 3 minutes ago. And he posted the damn video with Bryan Adams, Rod Stewart, and Sting. All for one. I'd like to thank Roger for doing that. Yeah. So this was the number one song in 1994. It was the number one song in 1994. I refer to it as Ass, Adams, Stewart, and Sting. And I clicked on it really quickly just to confirm that he indeed, Sting's wearing a skirt. He's wearing a skirt in the video. That's not a kilt. It's a skirt. He's wearing a skirt. And, you know, I've gone so out of my way defending Sting over the years. I really have. So, thanks for the reminder, Raj. Appreciate it. We're live in the All-Star Skyline. All-Star? Hey, Mal, you're an All-Star. All-State Skyline Studio. Here until 5 a.m. Coming up at 5 is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. 6, coming up at 6 is Steve Cochran. Coming up with are the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Okay, so the opposite of the Oscars. They've been around for many, many years. Are the Razzies. You know, they have fun with this. Some of it is kind of fun. Some of it is just dumb and a little bit aggravating. I do like it, however, when big stars show up to accept their Razzie. You know, I think that's funny. Like Halle Berry showing up to get her Catwoman award for you know, the Razzie for Catwoman was funny. And I think Sandra Bullock did it, too. If I'm not mistaken, and I don't know what movie she was nominated for a Razzie, but if I'm not mistaken, that was during her run when she won Best Actress for The Blind Side. And would that be
2010? She did go the day before winning for The Blind Side. I believe it was All About Steve. Let me confirm that.
Oh, that's probably what it was. That's probably what it was. It was
yes,
at Bradley
all
Cooper.
All About Steve.
All About Steve. Okay. And then she went. And she was like, and then you know, like the next day, she wins the Oscar. So she won a Razzie and an Oscar that weekend. So anyway, so here are the nominees. And these are all honoring the worst movies of the year. For Worst Picture, Gotti. Oh, John Travolta movie. The Happy Time Murders. Holmes and Watson. I still think people are being too hard on Holmes and Watson. I got to tell you, I mean, it's not good, really stupid, but there are some big laughs in it. Robin Hood and Winchester. Oh, my God. I completely forgot that movie came out. The Helen Mirren ghost movie from, like, last January. I think it was about a year ago it opened. Worst Actress, Hopper Stone for STX. Jennifer Garner for Peppermint. Amber Heard for London Fields, Melissa McCarthy for The Happy Time Murders and Life of the Party, Helen Mirren for Winchester. This has got to be the first time Helen Mirren's ever gotten a Razzie nomination. It's got to be, right? There's no way Helen Mirren's ever been nominated for a Razzie before. And Amanda Seyfried for The Clapper. For Worst Actor, Johnny Depp, voice only for Sherlock Gnomes. See, that's just dumb. You know? Will Ferrell for Holmes and Watson, John Travolta for Gotti, Donald Trump as himself in Death of a Nation and Fairness. See, that's all so stupid. See, that's this is when the Razzies. What are you talking about? That's just stupid. What, are you trying to make some kind of statement? And then Bruce Willis for Death Wish. That's good. That's right on the money. For Worst Supporting Actor, Jamie Foxx for Robin Hood, Ludacris, voice only for Show Dogs, Joel McHale for The Happy Time Murders, John C. Reilly for Holmes and Watson, and Justice Smith for Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Who was she? Supporting actor. Who is he? Justice Smith. Was he one of the kids?
I believe he is. He is younger. He's in the. I don't know if you said it was in heavy rotation or the NFL playoff games, but the new Pikachu movie.
Oh,
he stars in that.
Oh, okay. But he's a kid, right?
Or he's in his teens.
Come on, now, why would you nominate to see that again? And you know what? Jurassic World: Lost Kingdom is a good movie. The kids weren't that bad in it. They were fine.
He played Franklin Webb. Whatever that is.
Worst Supporting Actress, Kellyanne Conway as her... See, come on, man. That's just stupid. Kellyanne Conway as herself in Fahrenheit 11-9. Marcia Gay Harden in 50 Shades Freed. Kelly Preston in Gotti. And Jazz Sinclair in Slender Man. And Melania Trump as herself in Fahrenheit 11-9. So stupid. Worst Screen Combo... Any two actors are puppets, especially in those creepy sex scenes in Happy Time Murders. Johnny Depp in his fast-fading film career. He's doing voices for cartoons, for cripe's sake. There's a lot of money in that for Sherlock Gnomes. Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly trashing literature's most beloved characters in Holmes and Watson. Kelly Preston and John Gotti getting Battlefield Earth-type reviews for John Travolta and Kelly Preston for Gotti. And then Donald Trump and his self-perpetuating pettiness in Death of a Nation, Fahrenheit 11-9. So stupid. Worst remake, ripoff, or sequel. Death of a Nation, a remake of Hillary's America. Death Wish, Holmes and Watson. The Meg, which is a ripoff of Jaws. It's not. It's a shark movie. Not every shark movie is a ripoff of Jaws. Now, Jaws is the greatest shark movie ever made. And then Robin Hood. For Worst Director, Ethan Coen for Holmes and Watson. Kevin Connolly. I keep forgetting Kevin Connolly directed Gotti. E directed Gotti. Wonder if drama was on the set with Turtle. James Foley for 50 Shades Freed. Brian Hansen for The Happy Time Murders. And the Spierig Brothers for Winchester. And then Worst Screenplay, Death of a Nation, 50 Shades Freed, Gotti, The Happy Time Murders, and Winchester. Oh, no Holmes and Watson there? Or no Donald Trump? You didn't think because Donald Trump wrote speeches that were featured in the... It's so stupid and petty. Anyway, they're handed out the same day as the Independent Spirit Awards, which is, like, I think it's the day before the Oscars. That's when they usually do the Razzies. They announce them the day before the Oscars. So, Gotti and Holmes and Watson led the pack. Now, some of these choices are right, because The Happy Time Murders was just unwatchable. That movie was just, and so was Gotti. And I think there should have been more nominations for Peppermint, the Jennifer Garner revenge movie. Like, if they had a category for most racist film of the year, that would win by a mile. There's actually a scene in that movie, Dan, that takes place. There's a shootout in that movie where she's taken out a Mexican drug cartel. She goes in with a gun, and it actually takes place in a piñata factory, which they're using as a front for their drug. It's just, I remember, you know, because my friend Peter, who is a film critic, he saw the movie before I did. He saw it the Friday it opened. Unfortunately, my parents and I saw it together the next day on a Saturday. And he had posted on social media that it's like, not to say that Peppermint is racy, but there is a scene, or that racist, but there is a scene where Jennifer Garner kills about 30 Mexicans in a piñata factory. And I thought he was joking. I thought, that's funny, because I guess the movie is kind of racist, but he's doing this extreme joke just to say, yeah, hey, it's racist. She kills about 30 Mexicans in a piñata factory. I'm not kidding. During the scene, I couldn't believe... I mean, the whole movie has a racist undertone to it. I mean, the Latino and Mexican stereotypes in that movie are just horrible. Like, horrible. But when it got to the piñata factory, I was like, what the hell am I watching? So stupid. Anyway. But yeah, that Happy Time Murders, boy, that was painful, man. Just painful. And when I first heard the idea, like Muppets being dirty, I was like, oh, okay, that could be funny, you know?
Well, and it was funny because I remember that there was a big controversy because the tagline on the poster was No Sesame All Street.
Right.
And Sesame Street sued and said, hey, listen, we understand that you have artistic license here and you can use puppets and you can use them in whatever way you want. We just don't want our names or any variation of our names on the poster.
That makes sense. Or to be associated with the movie.
Right. Right. And like I thought, which was like a classy move by them, but you know, it ended up being nobody ended up seeing the movie anyway.
No, I mean, nobody saw the movie, but you know, the thing is it's tough, you know, because Jim Henson's son directed it, you know, and co-wrote it. And, you know, and so like for Sesame Street to come out and say, hey, I don't want to be associated with that makes sense. But that shows how horrible it was, because if you've got the Henson family creatively involved in this movie, then, you know, obviously that legacy gave it its blessing if you've got Jim Henson's son directing it. And by the way, Melissa McCarthy produced that movie. She's responsible for getting that movie made. So, anyway. So, those are the Razzies. You can follow them. I guess you can follow them online. I think there's the Golden Raspberry Awards or something is the website. So, for what it's worth, those are the Razzies. And those were my Oscar predictions. And we're going to take a break for the news. And when we come back, we are going to talk about some stunning actors and actresses who had never been nominated for an Academy Award. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. We'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. And it's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. Get your request in now. 312-981-7200. One artist, two songs. 804 area code requesting Rye Cooter with Tattler. So there you go. All right. Tuesday morning here. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. The Academy Award nominations will be announced in just a few hours. 4 hours and about 4 hours and 14 minutes, actually. And I will be watching it live. You can watch it live on the intranets or on your phone at either Oscars.com or Oscars Go. And then they'll pick it up about an hour later on the morning shows. The national morning shows. And, you know, the reason why they do that, Dan, because, I know that, I don't know, maybe E! Is going to run it live, because sometimes they do. But I know that the morning shows do it so that they can make those phone calls so that as soon as they're done announcing the nominees, they've got the actors and actresses ready to go. You know what I mean? So in that hour, you know, after the live, you know, the live announcement, and then when they start covering it, they're all the morning shows are making calls like crazy and doing quick interviews or interviewing people like in the studio or whatever, so that they have content for that last hour of the national morning shows. So that's why there's that in that hour they're doing a ton of work to get, you know, actors and actresses and directors and stuff lined up. But anyway, the Academy Award nominations are being announced, and I have an unbelievable amount of really great actors and actresses who have never been nominated for an Academy Award. And this IndieWire put this article together, and they've got 30 actors who have never been nominated for an Oscar. And there are a lot on this list that are just insane, that have never... Now, in leading the pack, and this one we've talked about many times, Donald Sutherland. I mean, the fact that Donald Sutherland has never been nominated for an Academy Award is just astonishing to me, considering how long his career has been, how many great movies he's been in, and how great an actor he is. I talk about this all the time, Ordinary People, which is a movie that I really love. Judd Hirsch got nominated, Timothy Hutton got nominated, Mary Tyler Moore got nominated, and Donald Sutherland did not get nominated. And his is the best performance in the movie. And not to say that the other three actors weren't great, because they were great. And Timothy Hutton would go on to win Best Supporting Actor. And all the performances in that movie are good, and it's a great movie. But he's the best thing in the movie. It is an incredible performance, one of my favorite performances ever. And he was the only one who wasn't nominated, and it went on to win Best Picture, and Robert Redford won Best Director. So I just always thought that was one of the worst snubs ever. But here's what they say. What should have he been nominated for? It seems inconceivable that Sutherland, still going strong at 80, has never been nominated, with a clutch of classic ensemble films under his belt, like The Dirty Dozen, The Split, MASH, Kelly's Heroes, and a host of eye-catching supporting roles that are usually catnip to the Academy, like Pride and Prejudice, Backdraft, and A Time to Kill. It's hard to see how he avoided it. The ones that you can really feel aggravated about, though, are Clute, which won his co-star Jane Fonda an Oscar, Ordinary People, which won 4, including Best Picture, 6 Degrees of Separation, and A Dry White Season, all of which tick all the Oscar boxes, and both of which he's great in. However, for our money, the most egregious oversight is not recognizing his turn in Nicholas Roeg's utterly indelible Don't Look Now, which is a masterpiece. Now they're asking, will it happen? Well, I don't know, man. I mean, he's getting up there. And he's a candidate. I think he's getting, like, didn't he get, like, a last year, did he get, like, an honorary award or something last year? I don't know why I'm thinking he did. Or at some award ceremony, he did get some sort of life.
Yes, honorary award at the 2017 Governor's Award.
Oh, with the Governor's. Okay, right. All right. Well, that's not enough. That's not enough. You know, I mean, there are a ton of people that we're going to talk about here, a ton of actors and actresses who do amazing work and have done amazing work in movies that have been nominated for Oscars and normally would get nominated for Oscars, but they didn't. But I got to say, this is the first, when I think actors or actresses who have never been nominated for an Academy Award, first guy that comes to mind is Donald Sutherland. He's one of my favorite actors of all time. First guy to come to mind is Donald Sutherland. So what do you guys think? 312-981-7200. Here's Tom on WGN. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Nick, how you doing?
All right.
Hey, I always thought that in Kelly's Heroes, when he was that crazy tank driver, we got bad vibes, baby. You know, I thought he was great in that, you know.
Yeah.
Something couldn't happen there.
Yeah, no, he's great in Kelly's Heroes. It's a legendary performance. And, you know, like I mentioned, The Dirty Dozen and MASH, The Split, Time to Kill, Pride and Prejudice, Backdraft, 6 Degrees of Separation, Clute, Ordinary People. I mean, these are great performances in great movies, and he didn't get nominated. It's just crazy. So, but I agree. Yeah, Kelly's Heroes, great movie.
Kelly's Heroes, man, he was excellent in that movie.
Yeah, he was. He was. All right, Tom, thanks, buddy.
Okay,
take care. There you go. Singing the praises of Donald Sutherland, man. All right, how about this one? Scarlett Johansson. It's kind of surprising that she hasn't been nominated, right? Of all the transformations we've witnessed Johansson go through, the most gratifying was when she, as a capital A actor, was Sofia Coppola's Lost in Translation. That they had us see her anew. While a nomination there would not have been out of the question, the film got 4 others. We'd really love to have seen her get more recognition for that movie. Yeah, I mean, Bill Murray got nominated. It got nominated for, did he pick a picture? It got nominated for, Bill Murray got nominated, Sofia Coppola got nominated, I think, for screenplay and director, and then I think it got nominated for picture. I think it was nominated for, those were the 4 Oscars it got nominated for. They could have threw in one for Scarlett Johansson, because she's great in the movie.
Yes, Best Picture.
She's great in the movie. Hey, did you see that Sofia Coppola and Bill Murray are reuniting for a new movie?
I did not.
Yeah, I can't remember what I just read a blurb on it, like a bullet in a blurb, and I can't remember. I want to say it's a remake of something. But yeah, they're reuniting, which will be cool.
On the Rocks.
On the Rocks. Is it? And
the movie follows a young mother who reconnects with her larger-than-life playboy father on an adventure through New York City.
Well, I wonder who plays the playboy father. who reunites with his daughter. Does it say who plays the daughter?
It looks like it'll be Rashida Jones.
Oh, cool. Well, good. See? We would like to see her get some recognition for two other recent roles. Under the Skin from Jonathan Glazer was too weird for the Academy, but Johansson was extraordinary in it, uncannily embodying her alien character. While If We Lived in a More Interesting World, her voice-only role in Spike Jonze's Her would have got a nod. That an actress so defined with her physicality could turn into a performance of such warmth and vividness without actually appearing on screen was quite revelatory. Will it happen, they ask. We believe it will, but not in the near future, for because her slate for the next couple of years is equal parts Marvel and voice roles. Yeah, Scarlett Johansson, she's terrific, man. Under the Skin is weird, though. There was no, I mean, I loved the movie. I loved Under the Skin. But there was no way that movie would ever get recognized by the Academy because it was so weird. I mean, really weird. Even people who like weird movies were like, man, that was weird. I like weird movies. Halfway through, I'm like, this is weird. This is a weird movie. But it's cool as hell. And she's naked in a good portion of it. So that you got that going for you. How about this one? Steve Buscemi. This is a guy who's been working for, I mean, he got some recognition on television for Boardwalk Empire. But he's never been nominated for an Academy Award. For this generation of established indie filmmakers, from the Coens to Tarantino to Jim Jarmusch to Robert Rodriguez to Tim Burton, and of course Adam Sandler and Michael Bay, Buscemi is the ultimate character actor. There's a whole generation of 1990s moviegoers who will say that. But while it's a crime that not one of his distinctive 100-plus film roles ever netted him a nod, it's oddly understandable. Buscemi is brilliant at playing snivelers, sneaks, and weirdos. Those are roles that, no matter how well embodied, are seldom embraced by the Academy. His against-type casting in TV's Boardwalk Empire, by contrast, picked up a host of awards. But the quintessential Buscemi role to us is Terry Swigoff's Ghost World, a part that plays on his inherent creepiness but subverts it and makes him human and mundanely tragic. He was great in Ghost World. And, you know, Fargo got 9 million nominations. You know, I mean, why not include Buscemi? Buscemi's great in Fargo. He's great in everything. But, yeah, I mean, he plays a lot of weird characters, and I guess that's a turnoff to the Oscars. And he does do a lot of indie movies that don't necessarily get recognized. And the movie that he directed too. Oh my God, the movie that takes place in the bar. Oh man, why am I blanking on it's a terrific movie too.
They are Trees Lounge.
Trees Lounge. And what was the other one?
His five were What Happened to Pete, Trees Lounge, Animal Factory, Lonesome Jim, and Interview.
Oh, right. Well, Trees Lounge was the one. That made quite a splash, that movie. That really did. And it was a terrific movie, and he directed the hell out of it. So there's another one. Steve Buscemi. Never been nominated for an Academy Award. Been in a ton of movies that have been acclaimed and award-winning. So, I think people just think he's a weirdo. That's why. So, all right. Let's take a quick break here, and then we'll come back, and let's hear from you guys. Who are some of your favorite actors who may have not gotten an award? And by the way, who are you rooting for tomorrow? Or I should say this morning, when they announce the nominees for the Academy Awards. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Ry Cooter, everybody. Yeah. All right. And we're back. And that's a 804 area code. Stand by me, Ry Cooter's version, 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. So get your requests in now, 312-981-7200. That's the phone number. Oscar time has officially started, and it's always a big deal every year, and the nominations are going to be announced in just a few hours. And we were talking about actors and actresses who have never been nominated for an Oscar, and it's shocking. And so far we've been talking about Donald Sutherland, Scarlett Johansson, and Steve Buscemi. And now the next one here that they mentioned is Isabella Rossellini, which is an interesting choice, Isabella Rossellini. She might come almost literally from cinematic royalty, but while her mother, Ingrid Bergman, won 3 Oscars and was nominated for a 4th, Isabella Rossellini has shockingly never been nominated. In fairness, her tastes a little bit more experimental than her mom's. But even so, the Academy have had multiple opportunities to nominate her. Her supporting turn in Death Becomes Her, for instance. So she's very funny in that movie. Very, very funny in that movie. Or Peter Weir's Powerful Fearless. Now, see, there's a movie right there that was completely ignored, except for one nomination. Rosie Perez got a nomination for supporting actress for Fearless. But the fact that Jeff Bridges didn't get nominated for that movie, which I think is arguably the best performance he's ever given. And that's saying a lot, considering, you know, Jeff Bridges is, you know, Jeff Bridges. but she was great. Isabella Rossellini was great in Fearless. Everybody was great in that movie. John Turturro was great in that movie. Yeah, all the way around. And Tom Hulse. Tom Hulse. Oh, Tom Hulse. That is such a good movie, man. Dan, have you ever seen Fearless?
I have not.
Oh, man, it's one of the most powerful movies I've ever seen. It destroys me every time I watch it. Every single time. But the obvious one would have been her breakthrough in David Lynch's Blue Velvet, a searing, surprising, and raw performance that launched her to stardom and won a Spirit Award for Best Female Lead. And while you might think that the film would be too out there for the Academy, you'd be wrong. Lynch was nominated for Best Director at that year's Oscars. If only Rossellini could have followed him. Rossellini stood out in a ton of screen time in David O. Russell's Joy, but lukewarm reaction to that movie ended the possibility. Hopefully other filmmakers can see how potent she can be. You know, it's really funny, Dan, that 86, in 86, that was like a big comeback year for Dennis Hopper. Because Dennis Hopper was off the radar, had struggled with addiction and drugs and alcohol, and mental illness, was like locked up for a while. And would, you know, like, was considered, you know, like box office poison. Nobody wanted to work with him anymore. He couldn't find funding to make his own movies, and he's a terrific director. He made a great film called Out of the Blue. If anybody's never seen that, it's my favorite Dennis Hopper. I like it more than Easy Rider as a director. So he couldn't get work. And so the year of 1986 was the year of Blue Velvet and of Hoosiers. That was the same year. So that was like, you know, and then he got sober. He wrote a book, and then he started directing movies and starring a lot more movies, and he continued working regularly, doing a variety of different movies, including Land of the Dead. He was in the George Romero movie he was great in. But it's funny because, you know, in Blue Velvet, I'll never forget seeing Blue Velvet for the first time. I saw Blue Velvet at the Lake Street screening room. The place was, and it was packed. It's a 50-seat screening room. We still watch movies. That's where Patty and I saw Welcome to Marwen, right down on Lake Street. So I'll never forget this. Sit next to Roy, obviously, because, you know, that's who I sat next to all the time in the 80s and 90s when I saw movies at the screening room. And the place was like, there were people actually sitting on the side, on the floor. Because this was such a highly anticipated movie, especially like movie geeks like us. You know, it's, oh, David Lynch, new movie. It's going to be great. And so Roy hated Blue Velvet. Hated, I mean, with a passion, hated it, and was astonished at how much I loved it. And, you know, like, he's like, wait a minute. He actually said something like, the screen wasn't made for crap like that. I mean, he didn't use the word crap. He used the other word. And I just remember that reaction, and I was like, I can understand, Roy, why you didn't enjoy that movie. This is not a movie for Roy Leonard. I got to tell you, it's not. And then when it went on to become, you know, the huge hit that it became and get these amazing reviews, you know, Roy was like, I don't understand what's going on. So Lynch gets the director nomination, okay? But what's funny is that, I mean, clearly Dennis Hopper's performance in Blue Velvet is classic. I mean, it's a classic performance. You've seen Blue Velvet, right?
I have not.
Oh, you haven't. Well, he plays Frank Booth in it, and it's one of the most despicable and scariest characters ever, like in the history of movies. And he's amazing in it. It is a classic, truly classic performance. But he got nominated for the Academy Award. He got nominated for Hoosiers, which is a much nicer movie and a much nicer performance. You know, he plays the drunk trying to turn his life around, the father of one of the players, and he has this moment where he coach. You've seen Hoosiers, right?
Yes.
He has a moment where he coaches the team during a game, and then he falls off the wagon again and all that stuff. And it's a really wonderful performance, and it's a really sweet PG-rated movie. And while everybody knew that the Academy was honoring him for Blue Velvet, they gave him the nomination for Hoosiers. And not that he wasn't good in Hoosiers, because he was great in Hoosiers. It was just, as soon as those nominations were announced, it was like, yeah, of course they're not going to give it to him for Blue Velvet. Huffing on some sort of gas in a oxygen mask, just doing horrible things to Isabella Rossellini. And yeah. But Roy did. God, did Roy hate that movie? Oh my God! All right, how about this? How about this guy, Dennis Hopper? Or not Dennis? Dennis Hopper. He did get nominated. Danny Glover. This is a good. This is a surprising one.
It is a surprising one.
Perhaps a victim of the Oscars so white hashtag before the hashtag, and indeed Twitter existed. Danny Glover's career trajectory was exactly the sort that would have him cozily racking up nominations. After all, the Academy usually loves a commercial actor, as in Glover's Lethal Weapon stint, which qualifies him as such, who goes serious. It's remarkable that Glover didn't get recognized for The Color Purple when it picked up 11 other Oscar nods. Yeah, he didn't get nominated for The Color Purple. He played a memorable villain in Witness, which had 8 nominations. But for his work on TV, especially Mandela and Lonesome Dove, he was met with award success. Glover's coming up slate is not so great, and so we'll see if he will get that chance. But I'm surprised by that. You know, it was a great movie. You see, my favorite Danny Glover performance, it's a small film by a brilliant filmmaker named Charles Burnett. It is called To Sleep with Anger. Anybody gets a chance to see that movie, Danny Glover is unbelievable in that. Actually, everybody is unbelievable in that movie. It's one of my favorite movies of the 90s. It's called To Sleep with Anger. And Charles Burnett, a brilliant African-American filmmaker who has made a lot of really great films. But To Sleep with Anger, that's my favorite Danny Glover performance. It's a little movie that wasn't going to get recognized by the Academy in any way. And it's also weird. It's also a very strange movie, a very strange movie. But that's my favorite Danny Glover performance. But again, that's a great choice. Danny Glover, never been nominated for an Academy Award, despite the fact that he was in The Color Purple, which was nominated for 11. So, all right, let's break. We got the news coming up, and then more actors who have never been nominated for an Academy Award. Welcome back. All right, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. It's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, we did it! And it's 773 area code, requesting the 3 degrees with the year of decision. So, welcome back. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. The Academy Award nominations are announced in just a few hours. And we're wondering who you're rooting for. What names would you like to hear? What movies would you like to hear being announced as Academy nominees for this year? 312-981-7200. We are also talking about an astonishing number of really terrific actors and actresses who have never been nominated for an Academy Award. We're going to keep talking about that, but our phone lines and text lines are open if you want to jump in. It's 312-981-7200. Here's another good one, Dan. Martin Sheen. Martin Sheen, never been nominated for an Academy Award. While nothing could ever make us wish he had not taken the role, it's possible that the years Sheen spent on the West Wing saw him become so associated with the character of Jed Bartlett that, like co-star Allison Janney, it's been hard for the Academy to get back to considering him a big screen star. Well, Allison Janney won an Academy Award last year for I, Tonya. And she's so good in that movie. She's so good in that movie. I got to say, and I love Allison Janney and I, Tonya, I still think Laurie Metcalf and Lady Bird, it was a better performance. And it's Laurie Metcalf, and she is from Chicago, and she's awesome. But frankly, by the time that show started, Sheen should have already had several nods handily on his resume and probably a couple of statues on his mantle as the anti-Bartlett in The Dead Zone. You ever seen The Dead Zone, Dan?
I have not.
Christopher Walken, you know what it is. he gets into an accident, car accident. He's in a coma for 5 years, and he gets out of the coma after 5 years. His girlfriend is married to another dude. He lost his job. He has to rehabilitate to learn to walk again. And he's got, like, you know, psychic powers now. He can touch people and see into the future or into the past. And so, well, you like The Dead Zone? It's one of my favorite movies of all time, man. So, and I also maintain that The Dead Zone, is the saddest movie ever made. I think it's the saddest movie ever made, because the horrible things that happen to Christopher Walken's character in that movie, it's just so sad. It's like just like terrible things. He's burdened with this power that he doesn't want, that's sucking the life out of him. He lost his girlfriend. You know, he lost his job. His mom passes away. It's just like, my God, man. So, in it, Martin Sheen plays Greg Stilson. He is a candidate for the Senate. All right? And he is a total bastard in the movie. I mean, just, you know, and so what happens is, Johnny, played by Christopher Walken, is walking. There's a political rally that's happening right outside of his house, across the street from his house, and his ex-girlfriend, played by Brooke Adams, is working for Martin Sheen / Greg Stilson's campaign. She and her husband. And he goes across to the rally to try and see her. And meanwhile, as he's walking across, Stilson, Martin Sheen, is shaking hands and kissing babies and stuff through the crowd as he's going up to the stage to make his speech. And he shakes hands with Johnny. And what happens is, when Christopher Walken in the movie touches someone, he goes into it like remember Trivial Psychic? We were talking about that. He goes into like a state, you know, and he has a vision. And he has a vision when he shakes his hand, he has a vision that Stilson in the future is the president. And that he's insane, and that he launches the nuclear rockets and kills her, but basically he blows up the world. And he sees this happen. So then the question is, should Johnny assassinate this guy? So then it becomes this moral issue. You know, like, he asks his doctor, played by Herbert Lom in the movie, he says, if you knew what you know now about Hitler and what he would do, would you go back in time and would you kill him? And Herbert Lom basically says, yeah, I would have no choice but to shoot the son of a bitch. And so that's what the climax of the movie is. And of course it ends tragically, because it's the saddest movie ever made. But Martin Sheen is so good in the movie, when he actually got the gig in American President, where he was playing like the president's aide. I was like, you can't have Greg Stilson in the White House. You can't. Why is Greg Stilson in the White House? Because he's going to blow up the earth. Don't put him in the White House. And then when he got cast in the West Wing as the president, which is the complete opposite of the Greg Stilson character. Yeah, Martin Sheen, he was great in The Dead Zone. But again, that's a horror movie. And it should have been nominated for more, because it's Christopher Walken's best performance ever. He's been great in a lot of movies, but it's his best performance ever. Christopher Walken won an Oscar, though. He won for the Deer Hunter. He was General Lee. Martin Sheen was General Lee in Gettysburg. He was the rebel on the run in Badlands. And how can we not mention Apocalypse Now, which was, you know, nominated for a bunch of Academy Awards. Robert Duvall won for it. And his performance in that movie was incredible. He almost died making it. He had a heart attack while he was making the movie. And it's an incredible performance. So there's another one. He didn't get nominated for The Departed. He was spectacular in that movie, and that was a movie that won Best Picture and got a whole bunch of nominations. He didn't get nominated for Talk to Me. So, I mean, you know, this is a guy who was just a tremendous actor, a great actor, and gave great performances again in movies that should have been nominated. So, how about this? They think Meg Ryan should have been nominated for an Academy Award. I don't know about that. It's been too long since we've seen Meg Ryan on the big screen, but though her career is a bit rocky now, she had a long enough list of great past roles that's a little bewildering she never picked up an Oscar nod. She was good in More Serious Fare, Like When a Man Loves a Woman, in Hurley Burley. Oh, I forgot she was in Hurley Burley. Yeah. She was good in that. She was good in Hurley Burley. See, you know, when you think Meg Ryan, don't you immediately think like a romantic comedy?
Yeah.
So not, you know what I mean? Like, but now I'm looking here, and she was also in Courage Under Fire. She was great in that. Now, I wasn't crazy about When a Man Loves a Woman. That was her and Andy Garcia. I wasn't crazy about that movie, but she was great in Courage Under Fire. But it's her romantic comedy roles, in particular When Harry Met Sally, that were her greatest achievements. It's hard to get recognized for comedy in general. But Ryan was so effortlessly and impossibly good in Rob Reiner and Nora Ephron's film that we feel that it should have been a no-brainer. But the Golden Globes were as far as her awards run went that year. So she hasn't really been in a lot of major movies lately, too. Her career has really slowed down. So we'll see if she gets that chance. All right. 312-981-7200. And Dave says, Ward Bond. He appeared in 13 movies that were nominated for Best Picture, but he never got nominated himself. I did not know that. I didn't know that Ward Bond never got. I mean, I know he's been a ton of classic movies. 708 area code says, you are right about Buscemi. He was by far the best of them all in Fargo. See, that's you know Dan, Fargo, that's what you call pretty solid ensemble. That's not bad. Not bad actors in that movie. Not too bad. Everybody's fantastic in that movie. He's fleeing the interview. Of course, Frances McDormand won for it, as well she should. She won last year for Three Billboards. Again, that was a good movie. Just thinking about that one. That was a good movie, man. Donna says, I would like to see Kurt Russell win. Oh, see? Kurt Russell should have been nominated for The Thing. Escape from New York. Come on. He should win an Emmy for playing Santa in the Netflix movie from last month. Kurt Russell rules, man. Been nominated for The Hateful Eight. Bone Tomahawk. Oh, you could just name Kurt Russell movies. But, you know, Big Trouble in Little China for playing Jack Burton. He should win all awards for that. Kurt Russell, man, he's one of the coolest people, one of the coolest actors ever. So cool. Oh, man. And he should have won for, you know, Dan, for The Thing. Best beard.
Yes.
It's R.J. McCready.
That little known Academy Award category. Best beard. That's the governor's ball. They don't put that on them.
No, they don't put it on. That one's not broadcast. Best Beard is not broadcast. You know, they call the Academy's Best Beard Award, they call it the R.J. McCready. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, well, you know.
Yeah, that's a good one. And that texture is also rooting for Rami Malek to win. I am not. he did a great job in a terrible, terrible, terrible movie. So, all right, let's take a break here, and we'll continue on with actors and actresses who have never been nominated. That Ward Bond fact is unbelievable. 13 movies had been nominated for Best Picture, and he was not nominated ever. It's really an incredible stat. So, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to share your thoughts on this. Yeah, man. Such a great song. And Fly. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's 2 for Tuesday. Yeah, man, 2 for Tuesday. 312-981-7200, 773 area code, the three degrees with When Will I See You Again. Hey, we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 o'clock. Coming up, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are talking about actors and actresses who have been ignored by the Academy and never been nominated for an Oscar. The Oscar nominations will be announced this morning, and if you have any thoughts on who you are rooting for, whose name you'd like to hear, or what title you would like to hear as a nominee, it's coming up at 7:20 the nomination announcements. So 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200. Next in this article, as actors and actresses who have never been nominated for an Academy Award, Idris Elba. Interesting choice. My main man, Stringer Bell. Elba had been a TV actor for nearly a decade before the breakthrough as Stringer Bell in The Wire, but perhaps of the scope and intensity of that role, there was never any question that this was a movie star waiting to happen. Well, yeah. You kidding me? He's Stringer Bell. Stringer Bell, man. Oh, God, The Wire. Best TV show ever. Best TV show in the history of TV. And he was so good on it, Stringer Bell. Oh. Don't even get me started on Omar. Don't because I'll start talking about Omar Little for the next 10 hours. That's necessary. Anyway, The Wire, best TV show of all time. So he was on that. He's a terrific actor. Hollywood just doesn't know how to use him. They squander him in parts like in Thor or supporting roles in Pacific Rim and Prometheus. There were a couple of times he should have picked up a nomination. Mandela: Long Walk to Freedom is not a great film, but it was highly Academy friendly and won, and Elba was very strong in it. And his nearest miss for a supporting actor nomination was Beasts of No Nation, which was critically acclaimed, and there was a great chance that he would get nominated for that. And he's Idris Elba, and he rules. They also chose here, this is a little an unusual one, Jamie Lee Curtis. Curtis's early career is completely iconic, but mostly encompasses roles in two genres the Academy traditionally disdains. That's first horror and then comedy. It's a great shame because even discounting her run as the queen of Scream Queens in the late 70s, early 80s, Curtis showed real comedian chops in films such as Trading Places and A Fish Called Wanda and True Lies and Freaky Friday. Yeah, she's a great comedic actress, Jamie Lee Curtis. I think she's a great serious actress, too. But, you know, Fish Called Wanda, Kevin Kline won an Academy Award for that movie. He won Best Supporting Actor for that movie. And it's one of those rare occasions where, you know, a comedy gets rewarded by the Academy Awards. Doesn't happen very often at all. But yeah, Kevin Kline won for The Fish Called Wanda. And Jamie Lee Curtis is fantastic in that movie. She's really funny in it. And she's great in Freaky Friday. Her and Lindsay Lohan were both tremendous in that movie. They were both really great, smart, great physical, and great comedic performances. So, she's currently in a political thriller that I think went straight to VOD, An Acceptable Loss, I think it's called. And I think she plays a politician, like a corrupt politician, trying to cover some stuff up. But I love Jamie Lee Curtis. She's always been my teen crush forever, and always will be. Next here, Ewan McGregor has never been nominated for an Academy Award, and he's been in movies that have done very well in terms of like critical acclaim and awards buzz. When McGregor's films are good, they're very, very good. But when they're bad, they're Mordecai. So the saying goes. Okay, it doesn't, but it's certainly true that the Scottish actor has straddled the quality spectrum quite spectacularly since breaking out in Danny Boyle's excellent Shallow Grave. So while we might want to forget about Cassandra's Dream or Amelia, indeed the Star Wars prequels, Oscar nominations could have easily come for Rogue Trader, Young Adam, The Impossible, and the widely beloved Beginners. And they should have come for his excellent turn as glam rocker Kurt Wilde and Todd Haynes' uneven but occasionally spectacular Velvet Goldmine, and of course as Renton in Trainspotting. Still the most unforgettable role on his resume and a true masterpiece. Yeah, he's a guy that should have been. I think he should have been nominated for an Academy Award. And you know what? There's another movie that got like 9,000 nominations that he was in, and he didn't get nominated. He's in Moulin Rouge. And Moulin Rouge got like a ton of nominations. The Best Picture, I think Nicole Kidman got nominated for it, if I'm not mistaken. Baz Luhrmann, I believe, got nominated for that movie. And there's Ewan McGregor. But he's a terrific actor. He's great in The Impossible. He is. And Trainspotting is just a classic. An absolute classic. All right, along those same lines, Guy Pearce. Sadly, an Emmy win for Mildred Pearce is the closest the Australian actor's come to an Oscar nod, though he's been a familiar face on the U.S. screens for 20 years. Perhaps he'd be better established already. His transformative turn in the breakout The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, might have gotten some attention, but it was L.A. Confidential that received multiple nods. Pierce's terrific, Weasley, yet principled performance as Ed Exley was not among the nominations. And then he's done other work that deserved more attention. The Rover, Results, and Breathe In were particularly great. But the best actor worthy turn that he's done is in Christopher Nolan's Memento, where he takes a near impossible task and tears into it with relish, bringing a Noirish leading man chops, pathos, and a light wry touch to the puzzle box structure. Could he get a nomination at some point? Pierce could have been a megastar, but seems to have actively steered away from it. We certainly wouldn't rule it out, though, should the right role come along, though we suspect that it would be for supporting role these days. Yeah, he was great in Memento. He really was great in Memento. You know who else was great in Memento? Our good friend Stephen Tobolowsky. By the way, One Day at a Time, Season 3, February 8th. Very exciting. We're going to get Tovo back on the show. Outstanding. Maybe we can talk about Memento. He's got some great stories about the making of Memento. He's like, he doesn't have great stories about every project he's ever done. He has a great story about getting up, going to the store and buying a gallon of milk. That's a great, you know, he could make that a very entertaining, hilarious story. How about Robin Wright? Robin Wright's had a funny sort of career. She was seemingly destined for megastardom in the 80s and 90s with first The Princess Bride and then Forrest Gump. And it's another movie she was in. There's a movie she was in 9,000 nominations and she didn't get one. But often she shied away from it, only to become a household name and Golden Globe and Emmy nominee with her work on House of Cards, the Netflix show. But she's never been Oscar nominated. She for not just those two movies, Forrest Gump and The Princess Bride, but also for State of Grace, The Crossing Guard, Moll Flanders, Hurley Burley, The Pledge, and many others. She's definitely become better and better and better over time. So our votes would have been for more recent performances, including The Private Lives of Pippa Lee and The Congress, a strange, messy movie, which Wright is undoubtedly fantastic in. But she seems to be just going to be getting her awards for her roles on TV right now. So, Dan, you ever watch House of Cards?
I have not.
I couldn't get into it. I know that it's a very, very popular show and people binge it all the time. And I know that particularly the morning show. I know Dave loves House of Cards. But I watched like 2-3 episodes of it and I was like, eh.
I know Dan Feinberg detests it.
Yeah. He does not like it. He does not
almost,
like it.
Almost as much as he hates Elmo.
I don't think he hates anything more than he hates Elmo. The passion with which he despises Elmo. I'm not kidding. When that came up on the show, I was taken aback by how angry he got at Elmo. You know? He's clearly a Grover guy. He doesn't like the fact that Elmo came in and took over everything, and he hates Elmo. What?
Ernie, our engineer, hates Elmo because he took over Ernie as well.
Oh, you hate Elmo too? Ernie, our engineer, because he took over Ernie. That's it. He hates Elmo. We should have Ernie have a conversation with Dan Feinberg and just watch the sparks fly. All right, we got a break for the news while Ernie continues to rant about Elmo. All right, the news is coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio on a Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. And one artist, two songs. Squat requesting some B.J. Thomas, I just can't help believing. Oh, B.J. Thomas. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. The Oscar nominations will be announced in just a few hours. And we've been talking about I made my predictions of what I think will be nominated in terms of some of the major categories. And if you guys want to jump in with your thoughts on who you're rooting for or what movies you want to hear announced at the announcement of the nominations, call us or text us at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. All right. And then we got moving along here. We've been talking about actors and actresses who shockingly have never, ever been nominated for an Academy Award, despite the fact that they're terrific actors and actresses and that they've starred in critically acclaimed movies, many of which have won Academy Awards. So these are some of the people that have been overlooked. And I'm reading this from an article here. How about Claire Danes? How about that? Some might call Claire Danes predominantly a TV actress. It's true that she's bookended her career to date with two of her best-known roles in My So-Called Life and Homeland, the latter of which won her two Emmys, plus another HBO for a HBO movie, Temple Grandin. But for the 15 years in between, Danes appeared exclusively in movies and racked up an impressive list of films that any actress of her generation would be proud of. Films like Little Women, Broke Down Palace, The Hours, and Stardust all featured excellent Danes performances. But we think the one that brought her the most awards attention, which it would have been Richard Eyre's stage drama, or drama, period drama, Stage Beauty, starring Billy Crudup. The film let Danes do everything that Gwyneth Paltrow did in Shakespeare in Love and more effectively. While the movie isn't entirely successful, Danes was excellent in it. Will she get a nomination, an Oscar nomination, ever? It depends. As when Homeland ends, Danes could stay on the small screen and move right to a movie. But she's good enough to get nominated. Claire Danes, interesting choice. I love her in Home for the Holidays. I love everything about that movie, though. She plays Holly Hunter's daughter in Home for the Holidays. And, of course, you know, she and Jordan Catalano. I don't even want to get into that. Now, here's a good one, Dan. This is a really good one. John Goodman. You know, I mean, this guy, one of the most reliable actors ever. He's so good, he should have been nominated for Fred Flintstone. I love John Goodman. I just think he's great. For 2011 and 2012, John Goodman was the only actor to appear in both Best Picture winners, The Artist and then Argo. He was in The Artist, and he was in Argo, and they won Best Picture back-to-back. Despite this achievement, being one of the busiest actors around, one a few other actors can match, Goodman's never been nominated for an Oscar. If it's going to happen, it should be for films with his most regular collaborators, the Coens, or more specifically, A Force of Nature supporting turn. So, he was great in Argo. He was very good in The Artist. He's so good. Hell, I would nominate him for that Cloverfield movie that he did, the 10 Cloverfield Lane. He was great in that movie. He's great in everything. All the Coen Brothers movies he's done. Come on, man. Lebowski? Are you kidding me? As Walter? My personal favorite, Barton Fink. So, Goodman, man, that's a great choice. Oh, Flight with Denzel. Denzel got nominated for Best Actor for that. Goodman's performance in Flight was definitely real strong and good enough, I think, to be nominated for Supporting Actor. Yeah, he's great. Let's see. They choose Pam Grier. Well, all right. You want proof of the Academy's unconscious racial bias? Robert Forrester picked up a supporting actor nomination for Quentin Tarantino's Jackie Brown, while Pam Grier, as the title character, giving arguably the best performance ever in a Tarantino movie, didn't. Despite Globe and SAG nominations and less than stellar five nominee lineup that included Judi Dench and Mrs. Brown and Kate Winslet in Titanic, in Fairless, we suppose, as a 70s blaxploitation veteran, Grier hadn't done all that much stuff to be considered Oscar fare before that movie, but Greer is still a great actress and an icon who didn't just deserve a nomination for Jackie Brown, but deserved five roles just as good. So, Pam Grier hasn't appeared in a movie since The Man with the Iron Fist, so she's not working as much as she used to. So there might not be a chance that she should get nominated. That was a really ridiculous oversight on the Academy that year. Because the reviews for her performance and that, because she's great and she's great in Jackie Brown, great. And you know, Robert Forster, obviously, everybody was great in that movie. Hey, whatever happened to Bridget Fonda? Have we talked about this before? Because Bridget Fonda's fantastic in Jackie Brown. De Niro's great in it. Of course, Samuel L. Jackson is great. Hell, Chris Tucker's even good in that movie. I don't know how that happened, but Chris Tucker is good in it. But it's a tremendous performance by Pam Grier. And I totally agree with the writer of this piece, because leading up to the Academy Award nomination, she was racking up a lot of awards from critic circles and you know, like they mentioned the SAG and the Globes, and she was widely considered to be a favorite to at least be nominated. And the fact that she didn't get nominated, and like Judi Dench did, is pretty ridiculous. So yeah, that's a big oversight. Now, I don't know about any other movies that Pam Grier has done. Oh, I you know what I would have nominated her for? John Carpenter's Ghosts of Mars. Give her a supporting actress nomination for that, for Ghosts of Mars. Yeah. You gotta love Pam Grier, though. Legend. Icon. Awesome. So, here's a good one. Jeffrey Wright. Such a great actor. From 007 to The Hunger Games, Jeffrey Wright is one of those actors that you're glad to see whenever he pops up, even if the movies sometimes stink. He won an Emmy and a Golden Globe for a supporting turn in Angels in America, and richly deserved. Richly deserved. He was great in that movie, Angels in America, the HBO TV miniseries version of Angels in America. But he never really got close to an Oscar nod. Though we could point to a couple of things like Syriana. Could have been nominated for that. And he was great in Ang Lee's Ride with the Devil. But his best turn to date was his breakthrough in Julian Schnabel's Basquiat. A movie a little more conventional might have gotten the momentum for a nod, but sadly his spectacular unmannered turn didn't register. He is working a lot with HBO, so the chances of Emmys in Jeffrey Wright's future are pretty strong. Following Boardwalk Empire, Confirmation, and Westworld. You know, he's working on Westworld right now. So, yeah. So, Jeffrey Wright, great actor. And also a really funny guy, too. Dan, have you ever seen him? Have you ever seen him interviewed?
I have not.
He's very entertaining. Very, very, very. He doesn't take himself real seriously, even though he is classically trained and considered like one of the most consistently great actors working today. But he's doing a lot of stuff with HBO, and that's not bad. I mean, you know, he won an Emmy for Angels in America, and that was an HBO thing. And then Al Pacino and Meryl Streep were in that. I mean, how do you not? Jeez. So, all right, let's take a quick break. We are talking about actors and actresses who have never been nominated for an Academy Award. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. Yeah. Well, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. And we've got more Two for Tuesday.
Yeah!
That is Squat requesting BJ Thomas, and that's Mike Clouds of Joy. Mighty Clouds of Joy. So, all right. Let's let's talk a little bit more about some of these actors and actresses who have never been nominated for an Academy Award. The Academy Award nominations, by the way, are being announced in just a couple of hours. 3 hours, actually, to be precise. And it's going to be interesting to see who gets nominated and what films get nominated. And if you are rooting for anybody, 312-981-7200. Chris says Richard Gere has never been nominated despite a great career. Yeah, that's true. That's very true. And he's been really good in a lot of movies. I mean, you know, the first one that pops into my head is Officer and a Gentleman. You know, I think Deborah Winger got nominated for Best Actress for that. I know Lou Gossett won. He won Supporting Actor. And that's the first one. American Gigolo is another one. Richard Gere has been really solid in a lot of movies. You know, 815 area code says John Goodman was great in Trumbo. Best thing in the movie. And that's another movie that could have been critically, you know, like a critically acclaimed movie. It was kind of an awards darling thing. And of course, Bryan Cranston was in it. Yeah, John Goodman was great in Trumbo. John Goodman's great in everything. Yeah, he really is. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. How about Julie Delpy? We were delighted to see Patricia Arquette pick up the Best Supporting Actress Oscar for Richard Linklater's Boyhood. It did make us feel for Julie Delpy, whose own decade-spanning experiment in time with Linklater, the Before trilogy, never got the same recognition, and arguably being as Delpy co-wrote the two sequels and was Oscar-nominated as a writer for both, her input was even more invaluable. Really, she could have been nominated for all three films, but was perhaps most unfairly overlooked for the last one, Before Midnight, which is a tremendously wise and well-observed movie. She's great in it, too. Delpy is a quite extraordinary in it, and elsewhere she's great in Kieslowski's Three Colors White, but it is the lightest of that particular trilogy, and while her self-penned, self-directed 2 Days in Paris is also a terrific showcase for her warm, neurotic, funny performance. Yeah, she's another one that I think could have easily been nominated for several things. Now, here's a guy right here now that they're mentioning. This is a guy who's on the cusp of being nominated maybe multiple times. I really believe this. Oscar Isaac. I think Oscar Isaac is great. I think he's great. I think he should have been nominated already. But, you know, he's got the Star Wars movies now where he plays Poe. But there are so many movies that he's done already that he could have been considered for. And in 2013, he gave one of the great Coens leading turns in Somehow Still Sympathetic, even though he was a jerk, title character of Inside Llewyn Davis. He could have been nominated for that easily. It was a great performance. The next year, he was an honest man trying to get by in a dishonest world in J.C. Chandor's tremendous A Most Violent Year. Another great movie that 5 people saw. Did that get nominated for anything? Because did Jessica Chastain get nominated? Because she's been nominated a couple of times. No, last year she was nominated for Molly's Game. But yeah, but if you've not seen A Most Violent Year, it's a really terrific movie, and Oscar Isaac is great in it. He was also incredible as the billionaire software genius in Ex Machina. So, Star Wars has given him the spotlight that should bring him to voters' attention. It's only a matter of time. It is only a matter of time before Oscar Isaac gets his first name. Gets nominated for his first name. How about this? Rosario Dawson. It's an interesting choice. With a career that spanned indies, blockbusters, and prestige fare, TV, and sometimes just crap, Rosario Dawson has felt kind of omnipresent for 20 years now without ever really coming close to Oscar recognition. The actress has been a huge talent since Kids. While the movie was never going to be on the Academy radar, she could have, and maybe she should have, for her turns in The 25th Hour, or even Rent. She's great in 25th Hour. That's my favorite Spike Lee movie. Have you seen 25th Hour, Dan?
I have not.
It's really, that's my favorite Spike Lee movie. It's the best movie Spike Lee's ever made. The first and best movie made about the scars that were left on New York after 9/11. In fact, the opening credits for it, when it was just Terrence Blanchard's score, is so beautiful and sad. But the opening credits for 25th Hour were filmed when the space where the towers used to be were filled with the two spotlights. And the opening credit is a montage of that. The opening credits. The movie came out in November of 2002. So it was only a year after the attacks. And it was shot in 2001. It was shot like in late 2001, early 2002. And so the movie is really, it's about that. It's about how fresh those scars were and how it, not without being overt about it, you know what I mean? Without being heavy handed, but it's what's coursing through the veins of the entire movie. It's a great movie. It is a truly, truly great movie. Everybody in it, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Edward Norton, Barry Pepper. Why doesn't Barry Pepper make better movies? Why isn't he in more movies? I love Barry Pepper. He's so fantastic. And she's great in it, too. Rosario Dawson plays Edward Norton's girlfriend. Brian Cox plays his father. Such a great movie. Her best work has come more recently. She was phenomenal in Danny Boyle's Unfairly Unloved Trance. Yeah, she was great. That's a weird movie, though. There's no way, you know, I know that Danny Boyle has, you know, been loved by the Academy in the past, what with Slumdog Millionaire, but that Trance is as far removed from Slumdog Millionaire as you can possibly get. It's a really weird movie, like a great movie, but there was no way that thing was going to get any kind of nominations. So she's getting better with age, so we hope she gets nominated at some point. How about Anthony Mackie? Now a big star thanks to his Marvel appearances, Anthony Mackie is slogging away while getting famous, and he racked up a few really great performances along the way. His great performance in Spike Lee's otherwise questionable She Hate Me was great. He particularly was a highlight of Half Nelson, in which Mackie exploded off the screen as manipulative, insidious drug dealer. He was great in that. Really great. But see, that was as great as he was in that was a real showcase for Gosling. You know, that was just like, it was a movie that was like intentionally made for the lead actor, and Gosling ran with it, as he always does, because he's so good. But obviously, the one that Anthony Mackie should have been considered for was The Hurt Locker, which won Best Picture. Catherine Bigelow won Best Director. Jeremy Renner was nominated, but he wasn't, and he was great at it. I like him, man. Apparently, he's developing projects. He's like a Jesse Owens biopic that he's working on. That could be good. How about Jeff Goldblum? I think he's too weird now. I don't think he's gone off, man. He's off in another. I mean, he's always been kind of a weird dude, but as the years have gone by, he's gotten more and more eccentric. And, you know, now he's like in a jazz quartet now. Did you know this, Dan?
I did not.
He plays every Sunday night at a bar in L.A. He plays jazz piano. He's in like a quartet, and now he's touring, you know? And, you know, like, I mean, he had two scenes in the last Jurassic World movie. They were both ridiculous. And, you know, he was fantastic in Thor, Ragnarok. He was unbelievably great in that. And he kills in all the Wes Anderson movies. He's fantastic. He's great in the Wes Anderson movies. And he did a great voice in Isle of Dogs. But there are things that he's done in the past where he could have easily been nominated. And I personally think David Cronenberg's The Fly is right up there. But again, that's a movie that's not going to get nominated for a lot of Academy Awards. It's a horror movie. It's really gory. But I think The Fly, the performances by Gina Davis and Jeff Goldblum in that movie are extraordinary. And I personally think The Fly is a romantic movie. I personally think it's a love story. I think it's a tragic, beautiful love story. I took a first date to that movie. So luckily she liked it. And she agreed with me. It was gross because there's really disgusting stuff in the movie. Have you seen The Fly?
I have not.
Okay. It's David Cronenberg. That's all you need to know. It's David Cronenberg. And there are some really exhaustingly disgusting special effects in it. But, man, it's a beautiful movie. But so, yeah, they think he should have been nominated for The Fly. And the only time he might get a nomination is if he gets a little bit more sane and Wes Anderson gives him something really big to do. So there you go. All right, so those are just some actors and actresses who have never been nominated. And we're going to take a break here for the news, and then we're going to talk about 20 purchases that could save you in the long run. We're going to help you out with purchasing some stuff that's going to save you in the long run. And that's coming up right after the news, which is next on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive on a Tuesday morning. Two for Tuesday, closing out. Two for Tuesday! 312-981-7200. 815 area code requesting Phil Collins. That's in the air tonight. Yeah, man. You know what I think of every time I hear that song, Dan?
What's it?
Risky Business. It's the leading up to the infamous train scene, the L scene. Yeah. I like that movie a little.
I've heard as much.
Yeah, just a little bit. hey, speaking of movies, hey, Dan, you know I host a film club event every month?
You've never mentioned it before.
I know I don't talk about it very often. I'd like to talk about it a little bit more. But on Tuesday, February 5th, I will be hosting a screening of the Neil Simon classic Barefoot in the Park, which is my mom's favorite movie. So this one's dedicated to my mom. And it's also one of my favorite movies of all time. And it is absolutely hilarious, a wonderful romantic comedy. And we're in conjunction with the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, which is in Rosemont, right down the street. It's at the Crown Plaza Hotel, right down the street from where we screen the movies. We screen the movies at the AMC Rosemont 18, formerly the Movieco Theater. Barefoot in the Park with Robert Redford and Jane Fonda and Mildred Natwick and Charles Boyer. It is a really wonderful, hilarious movie, like really, really funny, particularly Robert Redford. As I've said before, Robert Redford's performance in Barefoot in the Park, I think, is one of the best comedic performances of all time. He's brilliant and hilarious in it. So we'll screen the movie. It'll start at 8 o'clock at the AMC Rosemont 18. It'll be in the big, beautiful premiere theater with the big, lush, giant love seats with top-notch digital projection and sound. Big, huge screen, and we'll watch it all together, and it starts at 8 o'clock. I'll introduce the movie, and then after the movie, I will host a talk, and we'll talk about the making of the movie and some of the stories behind the scenes. We'll do a Q&A and talk about how much we love the movie. It is a really, really, really funny movie. I've never seen it on the big screen. I've only seen it on TV, and either on TV or cable or DVD or whatever. But it is truly one of my favorites and so funny. And I think one of the funniest things Neil Simon has ever written. We lost Neil Simon a few months back, so this is going to be like kind of our tribute to the late, great Neil Simon, who wrote so many, many great plays and really funny things and great movies. And this is like right near the top for me. But in conjunction with the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, which, like I said, is at the Crown Plaza Hotel O'Hare right down the street, we're going to have a little party beforehand. So it's 6 o'clock, and it's a Valentine's Day themed party because this is a romantic comedy, actually one of the best romantic comedies ever. A perfect movie to show. A perfect movie to show for Valentine's Day. So so what's going to happen is the guys over at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant are going to offer 15% off all your food purchases. You just have to show your ticket for Barefoot in the Park or prove that you're going to see Barefoot in the Park and say that you're part of the Nick D Film Club. It's 15% off of all food, and the food is great. We've done this now. This will be the third month in a row that they've hosted a little dinner party before our screening. Starting at 6 o'clock, show up at Murray Brothers Caddyshack Restaurant, have some great food at 15% off, and there's also going to be some Valentine's Day specials. There's going to be some special desserts and some special drinks just for Valentine's Day and just for the film club. So please come on out. Get your seats reserved right now for the movie, and it's at amctheaters.com, a really hilarious movie. You can bring the whole family to this one, too, amctheaters.com. All right, go to the seating chart, pick the seats that you want. They will be waiting for you on Tuesday, February 5th. So go now and get your tickets now and reserve them now at amctheaters.com. Also, if you have any questions or you want to make a reservation for the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, you can call 847-443-3673. Just tell them that you're part of the Nick DiGilio Film Club, and make sure you bring like proof that you're seeing Barefoot in the Park with us, and you get 15% off all your food, which is a great deal, and the food is really terrific. And everybody that works there, the service is great, the staff, the management, just great. And they've been so fun and kind to work with and give us these discounts you know, to tie in. So once again, for reservations or questions about the Caddyshack restaurant, 847-443-3673 and amctheaters.com for your reservations for the movie and the seats for the film. So amctheaters.com. And we'll see you on Tuesday, February 5th. It's going to be a fun night, and it's a great movie. So I hope you can make it. All right. Hey, how about this? 20 purchases that can save you hundreds in the long run. So these are smart purchases. Not all purchases are created equal. Some, like a car that's constantly in the shop or a giant TV that requires a huge cable package, they just drain your finances. There are other purchases, however, like the ones in here, that cost a little up front, but then they pay for themselves over and over and over again. So you want to save some money in the long run? Here you go. You get a coffee maker. That is, if you drink coffee. I don't have a coffee. I do have a coffee maker, actually. I don't know why, but I have one. It's in a cabinet. It's in the cabinet above my stove. I've lived there now for almost 8 years. It'll be 8 years in March that I've lived in my apartment, and that thing's just been up in the cabinet, just sitting there.
Did you own it previous the moving into the apartment?
You know what it was? My parents brought it over because they gave me some stuff. You know, they had some stuff that they gave me, because when I moved out of the condo with my ex-wife, I didn't have anything. Like I moved in with my ex-wife. Like I had a big one bedroom apartment that I lived in for almost 14 years in Andersonville. Big one bedroom apartment that was filled with stuff. I got rid of everything. I got rid of furniture. I got rid of everything. So I basically moved into it's not new anymore, where I live now, but kind of with nothing. I had to get furniture. The only thing I moved in with, I had a TV stand and a bed. That was pretty much it. Otherwise, I had to get, I had to get like a kitchen table and chairs and a couch and all that stuff, the coffee table. And my parents helped me out with that, with finding things. And I guess, they just said, here's a coffee maker. So I just I put it in the cabinet, and I don't have people over. And if I do have people over, I'm not going to make coffee. I don't have coffee. I have a coffee maker. So I could just pull the coffee maker out and go, look at this, and then put it back in. If you opt to buy coffee at a cafe, you're spending between $5 and $25 a week, and thus $20 to $100 a month, between $240 and $1,200 in a year just on coffee. After the upfront cost of a coffee maker, a French press costs less than $20. The price to brew coffee at home is about $45 a year, potentially an annual savings of $1,155. That makes sense. That totally makes sense. Make your coffee at home. You can get those nice little to-go cups, right? And if you want to get the feel of, like going to Starbucks, misspell your name on the side of the cup. You feel like you've gone there. Oh, look, they got a coffee for Nike. All right. Tupperware/containers. Preparing your meals in advance can help you stave off the temptation of buying that $12 or $15 lunch out of convenience. But to do that, you need containers. Buy some cheap Tupperware or use glass jars that you can otherwise recycle, as zero waste advocate Lindsay Miles suggests. Yeah, I got cabinets full of Tupperware right next to the coffee maker. High quality clothes. The paradox: the poor, unable to afford the upfront price of a pair of good boots, buy cheap ones which leak after a season or two and need to be replaced. Over time, the poor end up spending double the money or more on boots. Apply this to the way you shop for clothes. Eschew the fast fashion for classic styles in durable materials, so you don't have to keep buying clothes over and over again. All of this stuff makes sense. A fuel-efficient and reliable car. If you're shopping for a car, call Tom Appel. But if he's not around...
Or call us when he's on the air.
Call us when Tom Appel is on the air. Take the time to make sure that you're getting the best deal that you can. Choose a model that's known for reliability and fuel efficiency. That way, you can get long-term savings on gas and repairs. And additionally, get a car serviced twice a year to keep it running well and avoid as many expensive surprises as possible. And for help on that, go to Consumer Guide Automotive. Go to consumerguide.com. Hey, get a bicycle. There are a host of ways riding a bike saves you money on gas, on auto insurance, health care costs, fitness club memberships, and even entertainment. A bike doesn't need to cost a lot up front. A few hundred dollars will do. And if you're willing to buy used and do a few repairs yourself, you can get a good deal. I haven't been on a bike in years. Dan, when was the last time you were on a bike?
Yeah, it's been a few years.
It's been a long time since I've been on a bike. But that's sound advice, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know our guy, Bennett Wake Knight.
Yes.
Producer of the various business entities here on the radio station.
The business of fun.
And one of the stellar voices and one of the finest accent/impersonators of our time.
Yes.
As you've heard on the promos that run
the
station. He's a big biker and will bike into very bad weather sometimes to come here.
Well, I know people, you know, my first wife's father was an older gentleman who biked everywhere he went. He lived in Evanston. He worked near the loop. Rode the bike every day to and back. That's a good ride, man. I mean, that's a long ride, and he did it for years. And this was like, he was in his 70s back when I was married to my ex-wife. And he rode the bike from Evanston to downtown back and forth every day, and every kind of weather. He would ride the bike. In this kind, what we have right now, he would ride the bike. The wintry snow, the wintry mix, didn't matter to him. He'd ride the bike. He rode the bike to work. We just had the anniversary, the 40th anniversary of the blizzard in 1979. He rode his bike to work that day and was riding like over a giant hill and realized as he was riding, it's a true story, as he was riding, he looked down and it was a buried snowplow. It was a he was riding over a buried snowplow.
Wow.
Yeah. So some people will ride in any kind of weather, and it is good advice. So, all right, let's take a break here, and we've got more great purchases for you to, in the long run, you will save. We'll tell you more about that. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for talk or text. Once again, one of the greatest videos of all time. It's from the movie Against All Odds. And every line of lyric from that song is literally translated to the screen from scenes from the movie. Like we've cried or whatever. There's Rachel Ward crying. So whatever is happening in the lyrics of the song is literally being shown on screen with clips from the movie Against All Odds, which stars the great Jeff Bridges. 815 area code. That is 2 for Tuesday getting wrapped up this morning. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Coming up, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5, and also the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, we are talking about purchases that will pay off in the long run. Might spend a little bit more here, but in the long run, it's going to turn out well. How about a slow cooker? Imagine finishing your workday and knowing that there's a hot meal waiting for you at home. Not only will a slow cooker deter you from picking up takeout, it will allow you to slowly simmer cheaper cuts of meat until they're tender in a variety of hearty vegetarian soup with budget staples like beans and chopped veg. Used to have a slow cooker, don't anymore. A smartphone case. Most people have better things to do with their money than replace a shattered smartphone, which is why it's worth paying a few dollars more for a sturdy case from a company like Spigen or Otterbox than buying a flimsy one. I would call my case flimsy. But it does have the actress from High Tension with a bloody saw that she just put through a guy's head. So that... Got that flashback. Doesn't protect my phone very well, but I don't think anybody else has a phone case with a picture of the actress from High Tension with a bloody saw in her hand, blood all over her face. I love that movie. How about a high-quality blender? Smoothie and juice bars are everywhere in 2019. But drinking at these establishments too frequently can chew into your budget over time. Instead, make your own tricked-out smoothies at home with a reliable blender. Now, Dan, do you Like Esmeralda, you have one of them bullet things, right?
We do have a ninja bullet, yes.
How's that work?
It's fine.
Yeah.
We will use it occasionally, but in terms of that type of product, it does pretty well.
Yeah. Okay.
And going back to the slow cooker.
Yeah.
We have a slow cooker, which we love, but we are also now an Instapot family, which is the new trend for 2018-19, is the Instapot with its maximum pressure, and you could cook a frozen chicken in 20 minutes type thing.
I see infomercials in this room on the screens for stuff like that, for products like that every morning.
Yep.
So, how about snacks for your desk? This weekend, go on a shopping trip for your cubicle, office, or home pantry, and stock the shelves with nutritious snacks for your work day. When you're tight on time, we are apt to buy pre-made foods from the convenience store or run to the coffee shop, ultimately paying a markup for the unhealthy options. Investing in a stash of food can help you save money and stick to your health goals in the process. All right. How about a surge protector? Cut down on electricity costs by buying a surge protector with a switch that'll make it easier for you to disconnect appliances like your TV overnight. Used to have one of those, too. A drying rack. Not only will a drying rack help you save on your monthly utility bill, it's gentler on your clothes than putting them in a dryer, which means you won't have to waste money replacing them as frequently. Never had a drying rack. I've used chairs and stuff in my apartment. When my laundry room there was in my laundry room for a little while, the dryer was malfunctioning. It wasn't working, and it wouldn't get the clothes completely dry. So I had there were times when there was clothes and shirts and stuff draped over everything in my apartment. So. How about high-quality headphones? Do yourself a favor. You're frustrated by cheap earbud headphones that break every couple of months for commuting or working out. It's time to invest in a pair that will last for years, which probably means headphones of the over-the-ear noise-canceling variety. It's worth doing some research before making the purchase and weighing the trade-offs between various pairs. I can't do the earbuds, man.
I can't either.
They
bother my ears so much.
I know. I can't stand it. It just makes me crazy. And I have earbuds for my phone. I don't listen to a lot of stuff on my phone. When I do, it's uncomfortable. Like if I'm watching videos or listening to music or something. But I normally, I'm not bothering anybody, and I don't do it in public, so I just don't plug in the earbuds. But I can't. They're uncomfortable. I just don't like it. I know a lot of people who use earbuds.
We're in the minority.
Yeah.
Almost everybody uses them.
Yeah, and I've got. I mean, the cans that I have, these are big honking crazy headphones. How about a full pantry? Like having a slow cooker keep a pantry stocked with food is another way to avoid ordering in the last minute. If you have pasta, olive oil, jarred tomatoes, a few dry herbs on hand, you technically have everything you need to make, and you pay a lot less than ordering a medium pizza. A compact chest freezer. Buying in bulk is often a great way to save money on groceries, but not if those groceries spoil before you get a chance to eat them. By investing in a chest freezer, you can preserve discounted fresh food until you're ready to use it. Or you can prep whole meals in advance and save money when you work on busy weeknights. Let's see. Reusable sweeper pads and cloths. If you use a Swiffer to clean your floors, you know the attachable sweeping and mopping cloths can be pretty pricey, not to mention bound for the landfill. Instead, buy a few reusable cloth attachments and keep them in your laundry room rotation, and you can always have something fresh to clean with. They also say get a water filter and a contract-free cell phone. There you go. Water filters are you can get them from Brita or Soma, and a couple of reusable water bottles, and you'll never have to waste money on bottled water again. So there you go. All right, just some purchases for you to save some money on. And... yeah, I got a coffee maker and I'm not using it, but that's one of them. So, all right. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Dan, we have an author who writes books about Chicago on tomorrow, right?
Greg Barzo, and his latest is Lost Restaurants of Chicago.
Outstanding. So we'll talk to Greg about that tomorrow on the show. Lost Restaurants of Chicago. He's written several books that are Chicago-eccentric, so or Chicago-centric. I should say. So, although Chicago
and,
is
and eccentric too, yes, the eccentric parts of the city.
That's exactly right. All right, we'll take a break. The news is coming up right after this.